Good morning, honorable members. Morning.
Morning,
Chairperson.
Morning.
Thank you very much. I am being advised that we are five. And in terms of the quorum, at least we're supposed to be six. I know of two honorable members, one who is dealing with a huge accident in the north, and the other one who is sick. I don't know what's happening, but the secretary will actually lead us. But where I'm sitting, if we're five, unless we're going to take decisions, we need to proceed. It becomes more of an information session. But it's the first time we're in this situation. I hope others are going to join us. Do you agree that members, we should proceed?
Yes, Chair. I think I agree with you to proceed. Bridget, thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm sure in a minute or two we'll be correcting, but we need to proceed. Lindy? Can you tell us who is in?
Good morning, members, the deputy minister and dependent officials and the stakeholders with us today. Fortunately, Chairperson, by the time we were announcing, one member joined us. I wish to confirm that we have the following members in this meeting. Member Stock, Member Father Merve, you, Chairperson, Member Kongomele, Member Eris, Member Masango, and Member Abraham just joined. So we are six members and we're correcting. We can take decision in this meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say, honorable members, we are meeting during one of the very painful moments, having lost one of the very special women in the sector, Connie Nxumalo. I have no doubt she is a woman who had an impact on almost all of us, who was at the disposal of all of us whenever we needed her. She was at the disposal of the society, as far as I'm concerned. Every time I referred things to her, I had no doubt they were going to be dealt with. She was a very enthusiastic, energetic, and on top of her work at all material times. It is one of the most painful loss during this COVID we've ever had. And I've listened, I've read the messages of different members. I had no doubt that even the entire portfolio committee is badly affected. I would request, if members don't mind, just for a few seconds or a minute, that we observe a moment of silence in honor of this special South African. Thank you very much. I'm tempted to break the protocol and say maybe, I'm not sure if each party would want to say a word or two in a minute on this matter, because we didn't have an opportunity to speak there. If anyone, we don't have to. Does anyone want to comment? Yes.
This is Bridget. I would like to.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Chair. On behalf of the Democratic Alliance and on behalf of myself as a member of this portfolio committee from the 5th to the 6th Parliament, it was very shocking and devastating to hear of the passing on of DDG Nomalo, and you take time to actually come to terms with the fact that it is true. And I would really like to convey a very deep condolence and a sincere one to the family, to the loved ones, to the department as well, and to all those that she impacted in the sector. As the chair has said, she was a huge player in the social development issues, and I tried yesterday to get into the memorial service, but it was so full that I couldn't get in. So it really is something that has taken all of us, by so much surprise, and we are deeply, deeply saddened by this loss to the sector, to the department, and of course to the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other party?
Yes, Chairperson, it's Honourable Fanamarla. Can I proceed?
Proceed, please.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Yes, just like Bridget, I also worked with Sis Connie through the 5th and 6th Parliament. What always struck me about her, Chairperson, is I always say that if you've got a passion for what you do, then, you know, the battle is half won. And she always had the most wonderful passion for her work. She was very dedicated, very committed. It's no wonder that they call her social development's chief social worker, because she was really passionate and committed to the work that she did. She was a lovely person. She had a great smile. And really, you know, one struggles to come to terms that somebody as young as her would have lost their lives due to this COVID-19 pandemic. So again, also on behalf of the Inkatha Freedom Party, our leader, Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, I would like to convey our party's condolences to her family, to the social development department, her wider, all her friends and acquaintances. We are really losing a stalwart, Chairperson, somebody that meant a lot to all of us. And really, it's going to be very difficult to replace her. And we will miss her dearly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Any other party?
Chairperson, thank you. Letitia speaking on behalf of the EFF. On behalf of the EFF, we would like to convey our condolences to the family. And may I so rest in eternal peace. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Am I leaving out any other party?
It's Mari Sukas here, Chairperson, from the ACDP. I want to join my colleagues to express our sadness at the loss of Sis Connie. I've had only the privilege to work with her in the 6th Parliament. And the one thing that strikes me the most about her is that smile, that stretches from the one side of her face to the other. And the energy with which she approached her work, I will never forget when we were having a presentation on gender-based violence. Sis Connie, we called the emergency hotline in the committee, and Sis Connie afterwards were joking with us to say she was bragging, and there the line did not work at that moment. But it was that fiery passion that she had and not being afraid to confront things. I just want to say to everybody, our sincere condolences, our prayers are with the family and with all our colleagues. May God bless you all.
Thank you. That was ACDP, DA, EFF, IFP. Am I leaving any other party out? That's okay. From the department, we know they had a moral service. But I'm not sure if the minister would have one word or two. Is the minister here?
Chairperson, we've received an apology on behalf of the minister. She's attending
a cabinet meeting today. She won't be
with us. Who is here?
The deputy minister.
Chair. Can the deputy minister say one or two words?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and thank you very much, Chairperson. It is indeed one of those very painful days. I don't know what to say, because when I tested positive, Connie was the first person I called, and I'm the one that said, "Yo, you're speaking funny. Can you go do your COVID test?" I got my results on a Monday. And the Monday, I said to Connie, "Yo, you are speaking very funny. Can you go do your COVID test?" "No, DM, I'll do it." I'm like, just to say I'm positive, and I'm testing my whole office and I'm testing my whole house. And she was like, "Okay, DM, I'll go because you are screaming." And on Tuesday, Connie went with Nichipale because I was concerned, and Kumbola for 3 DDGs. So I said all the DDGs must go do COVID tests, and then I sent my whole office and my whole house. Wednesday morning, my whole house's results, including my kids, came back positive. So everybody in my house was positive. And Connie was the first person I called because my kids were very close to her. And I was like, "Yo, my kids are very angry. Can you assist?" And she's like, "Of course." So she called my girls one by one by one and spoke to them, and they started coming down. And I called, Nichipale called, "I'm positive." I'm like, so we conferenced with Connie. Connie like, "I'm waiting for mine." Kumbula tested positive, our DDG corporate services. That was a Wednesday. And 6 of my office staff tested positive. So we all got our results on Wednesday. I mean, they got their results 2 days after me. Later in the afternoon, Connie had her results. And she said, "Oh, DM, it was the 15th of July. I can never forget that. DM, I'm positive." I'm like, "Hey." So 3 DDGs positive, me, 6 from my team, and we're sitting at 52 DSD staff. So we all went on isolation, and the deal was no hospital. We all agreed. Nobody's going to the hospital. We're all going to be drinking whatever the concoction is. Thursday, we all spoke. Everybody's fine. How did everyone sleep? Friday, we all spoke. Later in the day...
Try to observe the time, dear.
Yes. Later in the day, I get a call. I don't know what Connie was looking for. And then I answered her. And then in the evening, I call her to check on how she's doing. Like, I checked everybody. She's in hospital. I'm like, "What? What are you doing there?" And 2 days we spoke while she was in the hospital. And that Sunday was the last day we called Connie's phone, and it was ever answered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sure. No, thank you. This is one of the most painful incidents in this sector. And we have seen it happening all over the country to many people we know, to our relatives, to people who mean so much to this country. It actually continues to make the point that this is serious. Issues of social distance and mask, washing hands is the basic we've been told about, is what seems to be working. And may her soul rest in peace. May their family accept our condolences. I think it was an important moment for the committee, especially that some of you were not able to access the memorial service. And I must thank you all members for using this opportunity to actually try to engage with the family and the country in that fashion. Any apologies, Lindy? Lindua?
She is muted, Chair.
She's muted. How can she be muted? She's not supposed to be muted, that one.
sorry, Chair. I want to avoid distraction from my side. There are two apologies from the members. Member, you just alluded to, Member Bilankulu, who attending to a family matter, her sister got into an accident. And another one, Member Mutaung, she's not feeling well. And also the minister who's attending the cabinet meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Chairperson,
yes.
Please also note the apologies of Member Nguyenia.
Thank you very much. It's a sick.
Sick. Yes, Chair.
Yes, I'm sure honorable members will remember how we had to advise Honorable Mutaung to actually retire from the logging. I also was scared when Honorable Bilankulu told me that her sister is involved in a bus accident, and we'll stay posted and find out what's happening there. The agenda, honorable members, can you put the agenda on the screen, Lindy? Ms. Ntabo. Can you read it for the Portfolio Committee, Lindy?
She is muted, Chair.
Anyway, the agenda is there, honorable members, is two items dealing with the issue of the first quarter and also with the issue of the update on the foster care agenda. Those are the only two items. I want to table the agenda for the members to adopt. Members,
I would like to adopt, Chair Bridget.
Thank you, Olmosang, or any seconder?
Honorable
Mvana again, Chairperson.
Welcome, Honorable Mvana.
Yes,
thank you very much. That is the agenda, honorable members. Can we hand over then to the department?
I missed that, Chair. I think you disappeared.
No. Will you start with your first presentation, Honorable GM?
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning. I'm going to request the committee's indulgence and for the committee to just support me a bit in the request I'm going to make. But before, the acting DG is here. With the team, we are presenting the first quarter report. I'm correct, Chair, that's the first agenda item, right?
It appears that.
Yes. So just a few remarks to indicate that the first quarter was one of the not so easy quarters for us as social development. It happened as we were in starting level 5 lockdown, and the demand of our services went very, very high because the biggest drivers of our challenge in this particular time was issues around food, where people needed to go went hungry because they could no longer be in the street. The second issue was the issue of the establishment of the shelters for homeless people, which was another thing that we needed to do quite very, very urgently to ensure that we comply with the level 5 lockdown. The cases of gender-based violence and femicide went very high. which required a high demand of our services, and that was another challenge. We closed a number of our services that included a lot of community disruptions. We closed ECDs during this particular reporting period. We stopped visitation to all of our shelters, including, you know, CYCC, orphanages, but we also made sure that nobody visits, there are no new visitors to our offices. Also, Chair, we had to upgrade our ICT system as COVID reminded the department of the importance of ICT because we host the country's adoptions and inter-country and out-of-country adoptions. And that system was manual. We needed to make sure that we are able to never lose any South Africa's children's information. The two registers that we host, NISIS as well, in terms of the country's profile. So we upgraded because we had to create a back office. So we did that and saw the opportunity to focus while there was lockdown. We had legislation like the Social Assistance Act, the amendments, the Children's Act that we needed to come. And within all of that, Chairperson, the social release, the 350 came on in terms from SASSA's side, and then NDA needed to make sure that we actually support with ensuring volunteers. So our white paper went, Chairperson, through the internal processes. It's now ready. And that is something that the committee has been waiting for since the fifth parliament, which we are really pushing to meet the deadlines. The social service recruitment and retention plan that supports the white paper is also being publicized for public comment during this time. And we did honor the Child Protection Week virtually and engage children to understand the realities that the children are facing and how they are affected by this particular a lockdown and being at home and not being at school and the support that they needed. We drafted all the standard operating procedures for disability sector in terms because we closed all the residential facilities and centers looking after disabled children. And we also made sure that those who are addicted to substance abuse are actually able to do. So with those opening remarks, Chairperson, allow me to also inconvenience the committee, if you would permit me. We have a bit of a crisis on our hands. As I was speaking, Connie's daughter was calling. The doctor in the hospital filled the dates on the forms that Connie died on the 22nd of July, 2020. And the death certificate is printed as such, and it's a whole total disaster because she can't leave now to go home, and she's being buried on Friday. So this is where we need to stand up and support the family, because the family is already down in Bushbuck Ridge. We only picked up the mistake now when the insurance companies were not paying, that there is a date error. So I am requesting the ADG, with your permission and the members' permission, to lead the delegation so that I can go and make sure I correct her death certificate, but I'm also able to go to the mortuary and get her body released so that she can go home.
I think we should allow UTM. I hope the members will understand. Is that fine, honorable members?
No, it's more than fine, Chair.
Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. ADG, that can you lead? We wish you all the luck, DM. We hope you put everything in order, you stabilize whatever. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Member Clinton.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, members of the committee, perhaps let me just also start by appreciating the messages of condolences that members of the committee have sent out today, and indeed appreciate the chairperson for his participation in the memorial service yesterday. It is a very difficult time for us right now, and DM has shared some of the challenges we are facing, and we are trying to troubleshoot to the best that we can so that we can assist the family at this time. We will be traveling, of course, to Mpumalanga to be with the family. There will be representatives from the department in that regard. So, but we would just really want to appreciate the committee for their messages of condolences, and we continue to pray for strength and for peace, and indeed for comfort at this very difficult time. Chairperson, we are speaking to you this morning and the committee on the Q1 2020-2021 progress report. If you could go to the next slide, we are presenting both the performance as well as the financials to this committee. Perhaps let me start by just indicating upfront that the targets, majority of the targets that we involves consultations, workshops, training sessions, and capacity building, etc., or either traveling from various provinces for face-to-face engagement, could not be met under lockdown levels 5 and 4. And that made it difficult then for us to conclude all the targets that we ought to have achieved rather at this time. So we only achieved 50% of our planned targets in quarter one. We, of course, the committee would recall, had to revise then our APP and our stress plan in line with the guidance from DPME. From those revisions, about 10 targets were removed completely because they were not achievable under the COVID-19 pandemic. 7 of those targets were new targets that we thought we would implement, 25 of the targets were revised accordingly. So we then want to indicate that those, of course, that was in Q1, and when we went into Q2, we submitted our APP, revised rather APP. So this first quarter report is based solely on the initial APP and not the revised APP. So a true reflection of some of the work that we've done within the context of COVID in the main will be results, will be much clearer in quarter two, because that's when we're implementing the revised APP. By way of summary, you could see the slide that from the 53 targets we had, around 21 were not achieved, and 5 are in progress or on course to being achieved, and 27 of those were duly achieved. We thought it was important that we provide, next slide, we thought it was important that we provide just some of our interventions during COVID that we put forward, that we were seized with at the time. And I think the DM has spoken to a bulk of those. I will just try and speak to one or two. As I indicated, our focus was shifted largely to creating an environment wherein we were able to curb the spread of COVID-19. And indeed, a number of measures were put forward, including adhering to the necessary protocols, establishment of SOPs and guidelines or protocols for our sectors, for our sector across various deliverables in terms of the specific interventions that we needed to do. And we issued directions, of course, which were guiding us in this regard. The DM has spoken to a bulk of these. I won't speak to them. Safe to say that some of our centers had to be closed because a lot of them required face-to-face contact, and we had to reduce that quite drastically and put a different set of measures in place. You can go to the next slide. I think the important thing was of course the measures that we put in during that time, which DM has already spoken to, around COVID-19 sort of cushioning measures or social measures, particularly for those in distress. And I won't speak to all of those, but the important thing is that we needed to continue providing services in a new way, and we put those measures in place. So progress on these interventions is presented on a regular basis, as you would know. We had to, I think one of the biggest things that we also had to do is find a way of ramping up psychosocial support through social workers and find a way of employing additional social workers. And we are still forging ahead with that program accordingly. Perhaps let me ask Thabani to take us through the specific programmatic activities, and then we will come in at the end.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Perfect Committee, the Deputy Minister, and all the colleagues present here. I'll just try and take you through the specific areas in terms of the actual targets, those that were met and that we did not meet. So how we have crafted the presentation, Honorable Chairperson and members, the first slide will for each and every program, we highlight the areas which we could not mainly meet. And as the DG has indicated in his opening, the extent to which the target that required the in-person, face-to-face interactions could not be met. And you could see as we present throughout the programs. On program one, the targets that we could not achieve fully amongst us, others relate to the ICT work that had to be done, because as part of us implementing the integrated sector IT strategy, it required us to finalize consultations which had to be formalized with provincial departments, and we could not be able to do that. Also, on the human capital, the sector-wide human resource plan as well could not be consulted during the first quarter because of the restrictions on the movement. And on the M&E, the framework that had to be consulted as well relied more on the policy work that has not yet been approved by end of the first quarter. The targets that at least the department were able to meet relates to the entities oversight. Committee members, other members would recall that this has been a recurring challenge that we've been having as a department. So what has been able to do is that as part of us reviewing our entity oversight framework, the terms of reference for the appointment of a service provider that will assist and work with us in terms of reviewing our entity oversight framework and put in place the system that we are able to strengthen our mechanisms of DSD, we have been able to complete those terms of reference, and I can report that we're on course to have the service provider appointment. As we develop the strategy for the next 5 years under the SIS administration, one of the work we wanted to do differently is to ask to develop an M&E framework, which is an implementation plan, so that we look as to the extent to which we are implementing our framework over the next 5 years. So we have been able to develop a discussion document regarding this this work. On HR as well, what we wanted to do as part of our commitment, as reflected in our integrated plan and APP, is for us to develop an integrated service delivery model. And we are on course with that. We have been able, whilst during lockdown 5 and 4 levels, we did able to conduct some internal consultations with regards to that, so that we enrich some of that particular work. You'll recall that on the finance, one of our targets is the main target that we have there is for us to be, as part of making sure that we receive a clean audit, is for us to submit our annual financial statements as required. But due to the lockdown and COVID-19, the dates submitted by the Treasury change, and we're able to submit on the good date, which was the 31st of July. Moving to Program 2, Chairperson and other members will recall this is just about transfers of monies, and we're able to fully achieve Program 2 because it's about transferring these monies to SASA for the payment of social grants. And the only thing that happened is that because of initial disaster, the payment for social grant beneficiaries for 1st of April, they were shifted to 30 March, and the funding as well, because of the 40.1 billion that to assist in terms of the top-ups for the 350 and the new special grant of $350 top-ups were also included, and these were for the duration of the 6 months as announced by the president. Moving to Program 3, the target that we could not also achieve in this related to some of the work we wanted to do. Part of it One of it is to say, as part of the commitments that we've made, and what this portfolio committee holds very close to their hearts is about how do we begin to link our social grants beneficiaries to other economic activities. So we wanted to do some work and on the policy that will be able to target these child support grant beneficiaries to make sure that they're able to be linked to government services as well as other economic opportunities. So this work could not be done because the planned consultation that we had to embark on could not be conducted during this period, which was mainly largely about level 4 and 5 of the nationwide lockdown. We could not do the work as well and submit to Parliament the draft fundraising amendment bill. And this work could only be done in the second quarter, Chairperson, because we are still waiting the cabinet approval for this work. On inspectorate, the planned documents for the financial audits could not be finalized and approved due to the restrictions in terms of movement. However, also the training sessions on anti-fraud that we had planned to do and conduct with the SASSA officials could not be conducted, as well as we could not travel and make sure that we have those face-to-face, because the planning had been done to that it would be interactive session. Whilst we did not achieve some of these targets, but there were those that we were able to fully achieve, which is the next slide, and relates to the social security policy development, and we're able to have an inception report regarding this work, and we're able to complete it. And the draft regulations of social amendment bill were developed, and this work, as you noted, we're even presenting it to the portfolio to the NCOP yesterday. There's quite substantial progress that has been recorded regarding this. And on the inspectorate and the appeals, we're able to record some of the progress there, as during the first quarter, it was about 95% of all the social assistance appeals were able to be adjudicated within the period of 90 days since we have received them, and all appeals have been awarded by the tribunal during this period were directly communicated to SASSA through the collaboration networks that have been established in this regard. Program 4. Honorable Chairperson, this is one of the major program that we have, and that's where there were some of the challenges and with regard to the target that were planned in terms of the trainings, the consultations, the workshop that has been planned, as we'll see in terms of the awareness sessions on anti-gangsterism, the work that we had to do in terms of training some of the social workers. We could not be able to do that. And in addition to that, the draft regulations on the Older Persons Amendment Bill as well was not being done, because we wanted to make sure that the bill is being redrafted and aligned to the African Union protocol. The second element as well, we did not complete our work on the National Plan of Action for Children. And these are the work that we are continuing to do in the subsequent quarters. And also on capacity building initiatives and that we had to do in regarding to on social circle support services guidelines, as we were planned to have, we could not complete them. Some of the work on the development of the services to persons with disabilities was not submitted to the technical team on the both the social and economic clusters as we had planned. There were delays relating to this with the CF process. And we, however, did record in terms of achievements to some of the services. That relates, number one, to the work on the white paper. In terms of the draft implementation plan, we made sure that all the required resources have been put in place. And also during this quarter, Chairperson and honorable members, we were able to gather the draft social services practitioners bill during this period, and also the department participated and also hosted the commemoration of the World of the World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. And this work was done on the 15th of June, in the which falls within this reporting period. On ECD work, we were able to finalize the research reports on the quality assurance as well as system support system on ECD, and this report forms part of the ECD quality assurance support system that we have developed. We finalized a concept document, Chairperson members, on the white paper on families, and also an auto tool to conduct existing parenting programs as well was finalized during the reporting period. On child protection, we were able to finalize the draft monitoring tool for the implementation of guidelines on community-based prevention and early intervention services. And also what is important to note is that during this period, the DSD was able, at the occasion of the International Day Against Drug Use and Illicit Trafficking, which took place on the 26th of June, the department launched the new drug, the National Drug Master Plan for 2019-2024, which we've been able to present to this August House as well. And what is important to note as well is that we have received approval for the to compensate three provinces on the new on that very same new drug master plan as well, and we are continuing with the work on the on some of the of the areas as well within program four. Moving to program five before I hand over to the acting CFO, one of the areas that we did not perform well is on special projects with relate to EPWP. We had planned to conduct some forums with different provinces, and this was only one forum that we were able to convene under or during this reporting period. On NPO, both the DM and the acting DG in his opening did indicate the extent to which we were to close down and cut on some of the services. And NPO is to appreciate, honorable members, is one of the services that at National we provide directly in terms of the registration of the NPOs and so forth. So this is part of the work that suffered severely. We, in terms of our plans, we want to make sure that we process about 98% of all new applications, but it was only 33% that we were able to do. In the reports that we also receive as part of the monitoring work that we for compliance purposes, instead of processing 80%, it was only 57%. And this is the result of the closure that we had to do, but also you appreciate the fact that most of this work is conducted by officials who are at lower levels, and most of them don't have the adequate tools of trade, and it requires them to be physically in the department so that they're able to log in into the system. So these are some of the improvements that we are hoping to improve going forward, to make sure that they've got the tools of trade, they could be able to work in wherever place they could, so that we in line with the protocols as warranted by the national wide the COVID-19. And also on the NPO's registration and information management, we could not be able to conduct our capacity building programs because of the restrictions and the limitations. We could not as well on new development finish the work that we had committed to do, which is about the costing on the youth development policy, and engagements with the provincial counterparts as well could not happen, where we wanted to conduct an evaluation on the youth camp framework that we had developed. Also on community development practice, the work that we had committed to do on the professionalization of community development was not developed because of the restrictions, and this required us to have engagement with various stakeholders so that we finalize this work. And also there were no districts that were able to be consulted as well during this period on the food and distribution nutrition security plan that we developed and we hoped to finalize. However, on program five, there were some of the notable achievements. One, it relates to the policy brief that we were able to publish and develop on the ethics of in the time of coronavirus. And these were done by the Population Development Unit. And also on the registration, so that we are able to improve our NPO online system, we were able to complete the appointment of Vodacom so that it assists us in terms of enhancing our system. On NPO fundraising, this we're able to meet as well fully this particular target. What is important to note on our food and distribution and poverty alleviation program that we have, the DM did indicate that during the lockdown, we were inundated by the high demand for food as a country and as also as a department. So if you look at our target, we had planned only to distribute food only to about 250,000 individuals and to only 100,000 households as our plan. But you can see that during this quarter, the first quarter, the demand even far exceeds what we could have provided even in the next three financial years, because instead of 250, we're able to provide food parcels to about 3.5 million people, and also we're able to provide food
instead to almost 900,000 households. This was far exceeding the target of about 100,000. I think, Honorable Chairperson, that's where it ends in terms of the performance information. And through you, I will then ask that my colleague, the acting CFO, Fanny Esther Raisin, to take us through the financial information. Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thanks, Mr. Buthelezi. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Yes, the focus for the first quarter of the financial year for DSD was largely focusing on the paying of the increased grant in terms of the SRD, the 350, and also the top-up grants, as well as we were procuring PPEs for all welfare facilities. So very much the spending mainly for the first quarter was focused in that area. So the first quarter we spent 43 billion, which is 20% in terms of the actual spending. The next slide, thank you. Who's operating? Tabani? Can we go to the next slide, please? So, we all are aware of that we've received additional funding in terms of the special adjusted estimate, which was tabled in cabinet in June. There we just give an illustration of what was given additional to the department in the special adjusted estimates. The social grants essentially was a net effect of 40 billion that was received additional for the 350 grant. And the top-up grants, there was some reprioritization in terms of the April payment that was not done because we did it in March. That expenditure is then reflected in the prior financial year, so we actually had a saving of the 15 billion. So this was then repurposed as part of the 350 grants. So the total increased allocation for our social grants came to 40 billion. The ECD conditional grant, there was also a repurposing of that. We have delayed all infrastructure developments in provinces in terms of ECD for a year. That was repurposed for the procurement of PPEs for all ECDs. Provinces are currently busy with that purpose. That was 64 million. And then we've prioritized an amount of 56 million within our goods and services and also compensation of employees. The first one being the appointment of 1,809 social workers for a period of 3 months. That's going to cost us 33 million. They were appointed on the 1st of June. And then we reallocated 23 million centralized for the procurement of PPEs. For the national department, the welfare facilities, and the CNDC. Next slide. Next slide, please. There one could see basically the spending of the different main programs in the department. For the first quarter, we were, as I said, focusing on the procurement of PPEs and the paying of salaries in the first quarter. If we look at our economic classification, you can see the slight increase in our COE because of the social workers we've appointed. And then the amount that's in goods and services, there was the increase there. There was a 9% spending or 10% spending because we're focusing on the procurement of PPEs. Next slide. So what we just want to illustrate on a monthly basis for the first quarter, there you could see for our compensation of employees, where we've appointed the social workers in June, there was the increase of about 3 or almost 4 million in June for our COE. In terms of goods and services, April we were still in the procurement process or in terms of ordering PPEs. We made a huge payment in May of 20.4 million and also a slightly amount there in June of 12.9 million. Next. So as I've mentioned, we've appointed the social workers 1st of June at a cost of 6,000 rand a month. Our goods and services, we procured PPEs for National DSD as also the welfare facilities. Just in terms of some requirements, the orders were awarded to level 1 BBBE status, which 50% was awarded in terms of 100% women owned, which was one of the statements that the president alerted to. Then in social assistance, you can go to the next slide. Next. There one could see the expenditure for the different grant types. And there the major increase of that we received additional was on social leave of distress, where the 350 grant expenditure is. Usually the allocation for SRD comes to about 400 million. Now an amount of 10 billion has been allocated. Of that, we've disbursed 1 billion to date in terms of that. Next slide. We wanted to illustrate where's the major increase in terms of additional allocations for the different grant types. Then one could see in terms of what we've spent for the first quarter for the different grant types, as well as the number of beneficiaries we've reached. And there one could see SRD is 1.1 billion, and we've reached 6 million beneficiaries in terms of the special SRD grants. Next one. Next slide. Hello. Thank you. So, yes, the spending on SRD, we wanted just to illustrate, now go back one slide, please. The table that you saw, that you see there is what we've reached in terms of the 350 grant. Obviously in April it was still busy with the systems and everything, and then we started paying in May. So the SRD was 6.1 million beneficiaries, and in June we've paid almost 7.1 million beneficiaries in terms of the SRD grant. There you could see the different numbers of beneficiaries that we've reached. April 17.9 million, 24.4 million, and 25.4 million. So we just wanted to illustrate, and I'm sure the CEO of SASA can elaborate more in terms of this. Thank you, Chairperson. This is what we want to present to the portfolio in terms of our first quarter for financials. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. That brings us to the end of our presentation on Q1.
Thank you. Do we have hands, honorable members? I can say for now I have got three hands. That is Honorable Stock, Honorable Fana Melva, Honorable Bridget Masango. Is that all, honorable members? Honorable Leticia Aris.
Yes, okay.
The other one?
Sukars as well, sir.
She must press there. After Aris is Honorable Manganye. After Honorable Aris is Honorable Manganye. After Honorable Manganye is Honorable Abram. Can Honorable Sukars press the machine, please? Honorable Sugars, can you press the machine?
Chair, there's only two reactions that I can make here with under reactions. The one.
No, it's okay. I will write you down under Honorable Abrams. All right. So those are the people we have, honorable members, Honorable Stock, Honorable Fandameva, Honorable Masango, Honorable Harris, Honorable Manganye, Honorable Abrams, and then with my handwriting, Honorable Sagas. Can we proceed in that fashion? You know the standard time.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me first start by appreciating the presentation from the department. But I must indicate today it's not an easy day for all of us, I think, in the portfolio committee, the department and everybody else, honorable members. It's a very emotional day today. We're all emotional. But I think we need to continue with the work that is in front of us. Honorable Chairperson, I think I just wanted to just make a follow-up on the unachieved targets. Based on the input from the Deputy Minister and then also the presentation from the department, which was made by the acting DG and also Mr. Buthile Zithabane, I just want to find out about the unachieved targets. What are the implications of those unachieved targets? I also want to find out the targets, if they are unachieved, what is going to happen? Do they die a natural death and then they are scrapped out of the books of the department, or they are carried over to the following quarter? What is going to happen there? And then also I would like to find out, will the finances be available to implement them and carry them over to the following quarter? Like if we have we've got an unachieved target, is the budget available to carry to the next quarter and so forth? What is going to happen? So it will be important if they can just give us an indication as to what is happening. I also like to find out, as my last point, how does the monitoring and evaluation and risk management tool used by the department assist in preventing targets from being carried over and also being unachieved? How does that tool of the department assist? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks.
Honorable Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the team for the presentation. I think I would like to concur with the Honourable Stock. I think we would need to get a catch-up plan on the unachieved targets so that we better understand, like you said, whether it will fall away or whether it will be absorbed in the next quarters. So maybe if we can get at a later stage a plan, a catch-up plan on these unachieved targets. I want to say that I think in terms of the entity oversight, the oversight framework, which is reported on and the progress in that regard, I think it's really welcomed. It's something that we've long been talking about in terms of strengthening the oversight and monitoring of the department over its entity. So it's good news to hear that the service provider has been identified. And I do hope that once the service provider is on board, that this committee will be taken through how this new oversight and monitoring mechanism will work. So that is just a comment from my side. I'm also pleased to hear that the Acting Director General speaks about forging ahead in terms of the employment of social workers, those who have been trained by the state, who have not been employed. I think last time I checked, it was over 5,000 social workers who are sitting at home. So I would like to know, when he speaks about the forging ahead in terms of plans, that he also provides us an update in terms of the discussions between themselves and other departments in terms of absorbing these social workers. With regard to the drug master plan, which is one of the successes, I would just like to remind the committee and the department that in our last interaction on the drug master plan, that we spoke about the need to get proper information in terms of our capacity in terms of treatment centres. For example, do we have enough treatment centres in all the provinces? How many beds does that translate to? And then, you know, vis-a-vis the need for those beds. For example, are all those centres currently full, etc.? So we would really like to get that information at a later stage. One of the targets that were not achieved is the implementation plan to conduct education on anti-gang systems. And again, I would like to say that once that is back on the table, that I think this committee would like a better understanding of what is in those education programs. Because like we've expressed before, that we're not sure if it has the desired effect on communities. And then lastly, my last question would be on the slide with regards to MPOs. And I would like to get an update on the issue that I raised last week, Chairperson, about the non-payments of shelters and other NGOs in the Eastern Cape and other provinces. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Liz. Honourable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are on the capacity at the department because one understands fully the reason why some of the targets were not met, because obviously there had to be some capacity constraints. And now that we are at level 2, I just want to understand if this is affecting the positively, that is, the capacity levels in the department and its agencies. For example, the SASA is at some stage operated at 1/3 capacity, as it was announced. Has that changed with the levels of lockdown changing, and to what extent has that happened, if it has? And also, I would like to find out from, there was a slide that was talking about the suspension of some services. One can just single out things like the suspension of the cooperatives and all those things where those interventions have actually a direct impact on the livelihoods of people that are benefiting from them. When are those suspensions going to be lifted, if they have not been lifted? And also, the COVID-19 lockdown will have, it has been said through research and other information, it will have a huge aftermath, if you like, in terms of it being very, very felt in the social services sector. What are the plans of capacitating the department and the sector to actually deal with the aftermath of the COVID-19 lockdown? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Masango. Honorable Harris.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, mine is out. We as the EFF, we think that the Department of Social Development is playing a key role during this pandemic. And the underspending of some of the programs are really worrisome, specifically those ones that could have been done on the virtual platform, like your workshops for training and workshops. However, Chair, mine is just then the other thing that I would like to find out. The department did send us a presentation before they did send us yesterday a presentation again. And in that first presentation they sent us, they indicate that they have 5,000 volunteers, but in the presentation that they did do today for us, they indicate 2,000 volunteers. I just want to find out what is the real figure of these NDA volunteers, and what will the role of these volunteers be. And then in terms of the closure of NPO registration, if this service was not rendered, I want to find out how is it possible that newly NPOs that were received funding from DSD during this COVID-19 time, how could they then be registered? And then I have also noted on slide 5 that the department is talking about a knock and drop food parcel service. To my understanding, in George, I didn't see that service happen. And then I also would like to find out how many social workers is needed in the country, as the department have indicated that they have 1,809 social services. Our social workers will be appointed for 3 months. And then, yes, Honorable Stop did speak about the achievement of the targets, that if you can provide us just a report on the targets that was not achieved. And then in terms of Program 3, the training for the anti-fraud was not met. But again, it goes back, we talk about 4th Industrial Revolution, why can't that training not happen via the virtual platform? And then I would also would like to find out what was the amount spent for PPEs on the CDNC, the ECDs, and social development offices. Yes, I think that is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Did you hear me, Chair?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I'm finished.
Thank you very much, as usual. As usual. After Honorable Ernest is Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Department for the presentation. Chairperson, I just would like to add on to what Member Aries asked about the NDA volunteers, and if the NDA CEO can maybe just give us some insight into what the numbers are of the volunteers and the CSOs involved in this, because in a question that I've also asked, I also got a different explanation in that the NDA volunteers are in phases, phase one and phase two. And then furthermore, that initially we were going to have 200 CSOs managing these volunteers, but we've only been presented with 47 CSOs. So maybe if the NDA can maybe just clarify those figures for us in detail. And then, Chairperson, I would also like to find out on the NPO registration, going forward, what is the department's plan to catch up on this backlog of NPO registrations? Are we looking at extend overtime to play catch up? You know, what's the plan to address that? Because NPOs play a critical role in social welfare sphere. And then just lastly, Chairperson, going forward, the policy work that can take place on virtual platforms, and I would like the department to maybe elaborate, can these policy work, the strategy discussions, the development of frameworks, etc., going forward, can it take place on virtual platforms like Zoom, which do accommodate breakaway rooms, et cetera, because it will also save us, will save the department a lot of money in S&T spending, a lot of money in venue hire going forward. And if it is a possibility, you know, if they're looking into that. Thank you. Or alternatively, if it's not a possibility, you know, are we going to then convene and have mass gatherings going forward? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Manganye.
Chairperson, Honorable Manganya is experiencing some technical glitch. The system kicked out. She's trying to log in again.
Honorable Seka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just have two questions, really. My first question really goes back to last quarter when the department was also... We asked the question, how much did the legal cost, how much did the legal cost amount to that the department had to spend against court cases? The department has failed to answer that question. And so if the department can please answer that question now in this committee. And secondly, just the biggest problem that we're currently having that I just want to alert the department to is the capacity on the ground. We are sitting with people that are coming to report on issues to do with applications for foster care. There are people that have been waiting for 2 years for any application in terms of adoption and to be processed. And I just need the department to give us an idea of how does the department assist specifically parents that are doing adoptions. And I'm asking this specifically because of the number of problems that we've had with people that have got children in their care that are unable to process any kind of application because social workers are not in those offices. So it is about the capacity of the department to deliver on its core mandates, specifically when it comes to the safety of children. I know the ADG was talking about how they will get more social workers. This committee has requested that the department look into using faith-based organizations where you have qualified pastors or qualified spiritual leaders. And do we have such a plan in place so that we just increase the capacity to respond specifically to child safety? We have a very big problem in our areas that has come to our attention with children being abused, children receiving grants, but the kids are not being looked after either by the parents or where they have been placed in foster care. The capacity of the department is a huge concern, and they need to look at that. And you can do it without it costing you an arm and a leg. So if the department can please respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Seker. Honorable Manganyi, has she found a way?
Not in yet, Chairperson.
According to my list, the only person left is Bilanguru's question, which I'm going to read now. Well, Bilanguru has got the following questions, ATG, to raise. She says, on the progress made to meet with the North Gauteng High Court order on the backlog in the foster care system, that's the heading. What have been the engagement with stakeholders, particularly with the Center for Child Law, on the implications of lockdown on compliance with the order? Has the department through provinces engaged some of the children's courts that did not extend 159 foster care under order during the lockdown? What were the outcomes of these engagements? Could this have had a direct impact on the surge of the outstanding cases? There seems to be surge in the processing of outstanding orders in some of the provinces. What major persistent challenges confronted these provinces from decreasing the backlog on processing these orders? On the first term quarter report on the financial and non-financial performance, only 19% of the actual budget was spent in this quarter. What are the implications of this on the spending of the department in the upcoming months? That is what Honorable Kate is raising. Now I am coming to the chairperson's observation. ADG, I hope you're still there.
Yes, I'm here.
ADG? Yes.
Yes.
Having gone through your report, what really is worrying me, ADG, is that again we're still not helpful in as far as this concept of targets vis-a-vis the new approach we're trying to take on results-based management. Because results-based management requires that there be a narrative. For instance, if you go to program, each program has got its narrative. Up front, the program would have said, these are the results we want to produce in this court, under this program, which will have an impact on that particular area. This is how far we've gone, and then find expression in targets. Because that target one and target two for the portfolio committee doesn't mean anything with due respect. So to me, it seems as if we're struggling to find one another on this. Because every program, there must be a narrative. And we've discussed this thing 2019 and this year. We are saying your intervention in each area is about making a difference somewhere. I accept program one. Program one is how you organize yourself to make that impact. But when you go to program two, that is where you are impacting on the lives of people, on the payments and all those kind of things. When you go to program three, you are dealing with what you refer to as a social security policy development. The social security policy development is responding to a particular program. And that problem is what the committee is always going to be interested in. Because what time you take to develop each policy depends whether that time makes sense or not. Depends on the nature of the problem you are responding to. Let me give you an example. In the security something, when you say social security policy development plan, the consultations, those consultations is not the important thing. What is important is why do you want to link child support grant beneficiaries to government services? And that linkage, what is it responding to? What is the problem that you want to correct there? Unless there's a narrative around that problem, whatever policy then you say you want to develop, whatever time you take to develop that policy, depends what its relevance and timeousness depend on the nature of that problem. Is that problem getting worse? Is the time you take to develop that policy making sense depending on the depth and the level of that problem? We are talking to the situation of our people on the ground. Policy is an internal issue, but the key thing, what are you responding to? What makes it difficult, ADG, to evaluate your policy is the absence and the clear narrative on that which it is responding to. Right? Now, because I read here and I'm convinced we are not ready to do what we're supposed to do. For instance, I have got a funny, I'll tell you, ADG, I've got a funny presentation which was loaded on my iPad. Program 1 has come twice. And Program 1 2020 has come twice and saying different things. Program 1.1 says, on the integration of management system systems and technology, it says no formal consultation were held with the provincial departments on the implementation of this thing. And then nothing is said on program 1.2. I don't know what to call that. If you come to program 1.1, I'm telling you, the first program one, it says human capital management consultation with all the units within the department on the draft sector human resource plan could not be concluded within the quarter. But if you go to the other program one, it says internal consultations were conducted and the concept document was developed as part of developing the ISTM. You go to the other program one, it says monitoring and evaluation. Consultations on the monitoring and evaluations framework were not held as the framework is dependent on the approval of the M&E policy, which is not yet approved. That's a major, major, major question. I'm going to come back to that. And if you come to your other program, what it says about M&E, I think I've lost this thing now. But what I can tell you, there's where it says a document or strategy adopted. All I'm saying, I don't know, why did I find myself dealing with two program ones in one presentation and saying different things? But here is a major issue, DG. If you have not developed M&E, because let me put it this way. Program one is a major, major, major program for readiness to do your work in a credible and a reliable way. Because program one speaks about integration of systems. It talks about human capital management. In other words, these are the tools you are going to use to implement these things that you are going to implement. M&E are the eyes and ears you are going to have to check whether what you are doing is making a difference or not. Because M&E ensures that everything you commit to implement, you know the endpoint. M&E ensures that you've got to tool on an ongoing basis to manage that. But if in this situation you don't have M&E, because in a nutshell, what you are saying here, you don't have an M&E framework. And you said you have not developed what to call a policy. The biggest question now is that, how are you measuring your performance as you do all this? For instance, entity oversight, you are saying, as part of reviewing the DSD entity governance and oversight framework, we finalize the terms of reference appointment of the service provider. But what is interesting, your entities, which is SASA and NGA, are working since 2019. But we're still talking about frameworks here. That, to me, on its own, is a big, big, big problem, ATG. Because it says we are throwing monies in the dark. I'm making it worse so that when you respond, you must clarify why should I not think like this. So if you go to other programs, there's a number of things that you guys say you have not done because of COVID. And I think there's an honorable member who spoke about this. I don't know whether it's Abrams or Honorable Stock or whoever else. Consultations, workshops, a lot of these things that have not taken place, the greater part of them can take place under virtual. It would be nice when you come back, every area where you say it could not take place because of lockdown, you explain in specific why can that thing take place in the lockdown. Of course, there's one way you say, you need face-to-face. There's also face-to-face in what you call in virtual. The point I'm making is that I want us to make sure that we separate milligrains or stem grains from chaff. If you were in the rural area where I come from, so that is more sharper. We hit the millis. When there's chaff, we separate the chaff and we deal with the sand. I want us to make sure that going forward in the second quarter, we know the difference between the SEMP and the CHAF. These are my concerns. Come in, ADG, okay, team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for the questions raised this morning. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out what's happening. Thanks. I will respond to one or two of the areas, but I will first ask Peter to respond to the issues.
Maybe
the
ADG. I do not see a first quarter report of NDA unless I've missed it. Because program two seems to be dealing, I don't know whether in program two it is SASA in a form of program as an entity. I don't see those two entities separately reporting on the first quarter. And I thought that's an arrangement we agreed upon last year. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think the invitation to us, just trying to see if I can find it quickly, was speaking more about the first quarter report of the department as opposed to that of the agencies. If I'm not mistaken, I will verify that. But I think that's
can we correct that? I think let's clean up before we start ADG. We may not be having any. We're supposed to have the shortest meeting today, but I think certain things must be clear. When we ask the department to give quarter report, those entities are entities that report to the department. If we say the department must bring a first quarter report, the entire area where we give you budget, including your entities, it means one report on all those things. I'm sure you will agree with me on that. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So perhaps to go with your guidance, we are often guided by the letter of the invitation, perhaps if we could, so maybe if I'm hearing the Chair correctly, anytime we get a request from the committee to present on a quarter report, is the Chair suggesting that it includes both the agencies as well? So in terms of the letter of the invitation, if it doesn't include the agency, should we also just make sure that it's inclusive of the agencies?
I don't like this dialogue, ADG. Let me tell you. I was suggesting that if when we ask you for quarter reports, we were silent on these entities, you are not going to report about them. whilst when you approve the budget, you approve it for everything. Remember, we discussed this thing, by the way, and we said it must be corrected because it appeared on the tradition before. And I think I don't want us to go deep into this discussion, because it suggests that if we can forget to write you a letter, we're going to write you a letter to report quarterly to the parliament, you're not going to do it. All I'm saying, let's not get into this debate. My understanding is that when we want a quarter report from the department, we want a quarter report including all the state organs that are budgeted for where the state is spending resources. Can we leave it in that way?
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for that. Okay.
We find this other.
100%, Chair. Thank you very much.
Amandla.
Thanks, Chair. So let me ask Peter to respond to the issues of NPO registrations as well as the food parcels related matters. Then I'll ask Fani to respond on the issues of finance, particularly the payment of what we spent in terms of PPE payments, And then, Chair, with your guidance, can we park the questions on foster care to when we present on the foster care presentation?
That is fine. That is okay. It's all right.
Thanks.
Okay.
And then I'll ask the CEO of SASA, the CEO of NDA, and then Tabani and myself will come in. Let's start in that. Peter, Fani?
Okay. All right. No, thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. There were three questions that I need to respond to with regard to the NPO registration. I think the honorable members, Eris, Abram, and Father Meva have asked about that. Indeed, we experienced problems with the NPO registration. As we are aware, members, that all NPOs in the country or any organization that wants to be a legal entity has to apply to the Department of Social Development to be registered as an NGO, whether you deal with agriculture, all NPOs in the country, in terms of the NPO Act 71 of 1997. During the lockdown, in the first 21 days, what we did was to ask all organizations, we did, I think, a media statement and send out that all NGOs must apply using the online system, which is available, which was there, so that they can apply. But also, I think due to the COVID, there have been a lot of disturbances because we only not register, we also receive reports for the NPOs that are supposed to send. We also provide customer service, which is a service that NPOs come and queue here. Every day there's a queue, long queue. But during lockdown, we were closed, meaning that the services were not rendered at the level which is supposed to be rendered. It was just only online. We have experienced a lot of challenges because a lot of NPOs will call that we send on the online system is not working. Indeed, yes, there's a lot of disturbances that we have seen. We are counting on the radar in terms of how many, because the law requires us to register an organization as an NPO within 2 months of application. As we stand now, we just have under 3,000 NPOs that are hanging there that are still not registered, but that note has gone through over 2 months. We were registering NPOs within 2 weeks throughout the year. We have bettered our system. Within 2 weeks, you get your certificate, unless you have got some queries you left to write things that will go on and on to you, to us, then you will have a problem. But a normal NPO is within 2 weeks. Now we have gone back we are spending a month to register an NPO. For those that have got queries or that have got incomplete applications, we have gone back to 2 months applications The plan that we've put in place is to a staff, we haven't, under level three, we were closed. Under level two, we are just busy preparing the site here at the office so that people could come, but limited people should come to limit the distancing, because that customer, they sit on the bench. So like in the bank, like any or post office, we have just limited that. We are busy dealing with that so that we can start our customer service. We have, that's number one. Number two, we also reallocated people to deal with the issues of rotate them, take some more staff from other area to one area to make sure that they are registered in time. Thirdly, we will have to do an overtime so that people can work every day, Monday to Monday. When they knock off at 4, we extend up to 20 hours so that we can catch up. We need not have any backlog. A backlog is someone who has been waiting for more than our initial performance of 2 weeks. That's how we define it. So the plan is to reallocate more staff and to do overtime and catch, so that we can catch up and reduce that backlog of 3,000 plus on the system. The second question was the issue of the payment of the NPOs that are rendering services throughout the province. You know, this payment takes place in provinces. Our role is to monitor how they are being paid. Immediately we entered the lockdown. In April, we issued a directive that we think that they must pay the NGOs, because if they don't pay, their electricity will be paid, will be closed, the ECD teachers will be, we will not get the pay, and as NPOs, they live from hand to mouth. So we issued a directive to provinces. We also issued a directive and said that they need to extend the SLAA of 1920 financial year to cover the first two quarters of 2020-2021 so that they are able to pay. We also spoke to the AG that we need to pay a certain amount to those NPOs. In the first quarters, all provinces heed the call and paid, except the Eastern Cape that we have a problem with. Second quarter payments, as we monitor and provide support to provinces to ensure that they do the work. Most of the provinces has already paid. I want to read for you. The KZN on the second quarter payment, they are at 74.25. That is last week. We will be able to get a report this Friday.
Sorry, Peter. Payment of?
Of subsidies to non-profit organization rendering social services.
All right.
Yes. Free State is at 92%. They are left with only 127. That's of last week. We're getting progress report with the provinces every week. The ADG wrote, we met as a department, the minister organized Minimec to deal with this issue, because it's a thorny issue. ADG organized HSDS, which we meet on a weekly basis. We discussed it. What are the challenges? I will tell you the challenges when I finish. The Northern Cape, they've paid all their NPOs. They're not so much. The Western Cape, they are at 98%. Only 47 NPOs were not paid. Limpopo paid 88% of their NPOs, or they are left with 354. Eastern Cape is the problem. They didn't pay first quarter. They are at 30%, and over 2.4 NPOs are not yet paid. There are some challenges that I'm going to relate to you. And then Mpumalanga, they are at 88. Mpumalanga, they were at second quarter, they were at 2%, and they were at 2%. Now, the challenges that the province have reported to us, sorry, Mpumalanga is at 20% paid. They are left with 1,954 NPOs to be paid. Challenges are related to these payments are as follows. When we lock down, staff were not going to work. And for the NPOs to get to be paid, staff at a district level, at a province level, need to process the payment. So they were not processed. Secondly, in one province of Eastern Cape, the most that we have got a challenge with, in January, February, I think staff, we were told staff went tools down. They were not working. And they implemented a new system which needed, which is labor intensive, that needed staff to deal with. And I think all this, I think one of the honorable members has mentioned that I think the capacity at the local level is lower. And I think those are the things that the province were experiencing. There's been some challenges that have been raised with regard to the provinces not paying all the money. Yes, some money were not paid in the first quarter, not all, because of the AG's issue. You don't pay some of the things. They paid administration fees for them to pay to deal because they were not rendering services. But for the second quarter, they are paying all amount, no percentage of the amount that they were supposed to be paid were paid. In Eastern Cape, what we are dealing with also is the support and also ensuring that staff must come to work. And they are at 30%, and we're hoping that our support and our interventions in Eastern Cape and the Northwest will be able to deliver, make sure that the services are delivered accordingly. The last question that was asked is about the knock and drop. The honorable member says, I don't know what a knock and drop is. Now, what we are saying here, the knock and drop is a term.
Hello?
Who's speaking now?
Sorry, Chase, me, Honorable Alex. I don't know what's knock and drop. I know what's knock and drop. What I say is that I haven't seen any knock and drops in Georgia. That is what I was saying.
No. Fine. It's okay. And Peter, Peter, you can't say you don't know knock and drop.
Yeah, no.
Honorable Aris, are you referring to food parcels?
Yes.
But then Peter can't say she that he doesn't know that. Proceed. Peter.
Maybe.
Okay. No. Let me apologize. Yes. Let me apologize, Honorable Chair, and to Honorable Aris. She's specific in terms of saying she didn't see knock and drop in Jaws. What we will do is we will investigate the matter with the Western Cape Provincial Department because we requested all provinces to issue food using their CNDC, delivering food to the household. So what we will do, Chairperson and Honorable Aris, we will investigate with Western Cape how they were delivering food in George. And I think the report will be provided. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to add, there are some areas, and Peter is correct that we've asked the provinces to do such. And we'll indeed check up on that with regards to the Western Cape and come back to the honourable member. I know there are some areas where the deliveries were slightly slow because of numerous challenges, but we'll check that out. And also just to perhaps indicate that the CNDCs are not necessarily in every single town, but they are in various parts. I think we try and cover most districts. Most if not all districts. So at some stages they may not necessarily get to some of the places. Chair, let me ask Brenda to quickly respond to the other question by Honorable Aris on the inspectors. And then I will ask Fani to respond to the other areas, and then Kumbula to respond on the HR issues and the ICTS issues. Brenda?
Thank you, ADG. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. The questions that were asked about the inspector, the question was asked by Honorable Aris regarding why we did not do the consult, the training, the anti-fraud training using verbal virtual means. And this question applies also to other work that we were meant to do, where we needed to do consultations. Unfortunately, Honourable Member, the challenge that we face is that although we ourselves would have the tools to be able to do virtual meetings to invite people, the challenge is the stakeholders that we need to engage with do not necessarily have the tools themselves. For example, when we needed to do the training, that training was intended to happen with SASSA officials. And some of those SASSA officials are at level 5 and 6, and those sort of levels, and during the lockdown period, level 5 and 4, they would not have even been going to the offices. They did not have computers and access to data for us to be able to engage with them using virtual means. So that was one of the challenges. Similarly with other, for example, the linking program that we wanted to do, the consultations on the policy on linking grant beneficiaries. The sort of stakeholders we wanted to engage with there are civil society organizations and individual people in the community, and those needed to be organized to come together in spaces so that we'll be able to have the consultations with them. If they don't have data and they don't have computers or laptops and those sorts of things, it means we can render the service, but they would not be able to access it. So we need to find other ways of doing that. One of the things that we are doing now is exploring the possibility of putting our documents on the departmental website and allow people to send in comments. Of course, even that one means we will not get the amount of response that we would like to get, but we will be looking at those sorts of ways of providing the material and the policy documents that we want people to comment on our website and allow people to provide that. But that means some of the people who would not have those tools of trade, so to speak, would not be able to participate, and we need to look at other ways of ensuring that we still bring them in. So this applies. And in terms of the other question that was asked by Honorable Stock around what's going to happen to those targets that were not achieved, I'm pleased to say that a lot of them we are making progress in, especially particularly with respect to the program framework around the fundraising bill. It has already been approved, although it was mentioned going to Parliament in the last quarter. Now that there was a delay in cabinet itself not during level 5. Therefore, that's why it didn't get approved that to come to Parliament. But now that it's been approved, it will be making its way through to Parliament to be considered. So we are continuing with the work that we are catching up in a way with the work that we couldn't do during level 5 and 4. Now that the levels have loosened, it's easier to continue some of that work, and it's continuing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask Fani to quickly respond on the issues of PPEs?
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. So in terms of what Honourable Stock asked, in terms of the procurement of PPEs, there were four different areas. One that I mentioned was the one for the ECDs. The 64 million is still not yet expenditure, but it's allocated to provinces as part of the conditional grant that provincial DSD will procure for all PPEs for ECDs to get them ready to open. The wellness facilities one, we've done those procurement in April and May. The total expenditure that we've incurred, which was already procured, delivered and everything, was 18.7 million in total for all our facilities in the country. The CMDCs ones, the orders are out. The total expenditure that will be incurred is 3.6 million. That will be paid by national. And then for the national office, in terms of our officials and department, was for the procurement of masks, sanitizers. We also extended the contract for cleaning in terms of sanitizing the building on a quarterly basis. But also if there's a COVID case, that we sanitize the building immediately. So our total expenditure there to date is 2.8 million. So in total, what we've paid so far is around about 21 million.
And then the 3.6 for the CNGCs will come, but the 64 remains as part of the conditional ground expenditure. That's what has occurred so far. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Fanny. Can I ask Mula to respond on the issues on the IMST and the HR plans? Or HCM matters, rather.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me concede that the way it is phrased is somewhat conceding. There are actually two targets there. The first target was the service delivery model. The second target is the sector HR plan. Let me start with the last one. We've got a draft sector HR plan. This sector HR plan was developed and it was consulted with the provinces in February. The sector HR plan talks to two things: the number of people in the sector that you employ or employees in the sector, and the second issue there is the issue of skills and competences within the sector. Now, once we produced the draft sector plan, we then had to go back to the provinces to look at the gaps in the document that we had developed. This is the meeting that is going to happen, and this is the meeting that is still going to happen. It did not happen because of the lockdown, right? But we are initiating a process to actually resolve that problem. Then on the service delivery model, the service delivery model has actually been developed. It was consulted within the department. All the chief directorates were consulted except three. And that process is ongoing, and we are going to finalize that process. Now, I hit the point from the chair that we should have done this via virtual. Now, during lockdown, it was not possible, but it is possible now, and we will continue to do it. In fact, we've had to move our dates for the finalization of the consultation process, and we are quite confident that process is going to be finalized. On the ICT issues, essentially what we've done here, we've dealt with the elements of the ICT, like the issue of we've dealt with the certain elements of the sector ITC strategy. But of course, we've been frustrated by funding as well as the availability of the provinces on this issue. However, there were issues of consolidations of systems, right, within the department, and that work has been done. But that work is ongoing. It has not been finalized. I hope I'm clarifying this matter.
Thanks, Kubula.
Can you just repeat this IT thing? I'm trying to follow this.
The IT thing is just the integration of systems within IT systems, right?
Yeah. At what stage is it?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that the systems were not talking to each other, right? So there are two problems. There's a departmental problem, and then there's a sector problem. At the level of the department, we had silo systems that were not talking to each other, and five of these systems have actually been integrated now, and they now speak to each other. But our task was not necessarily to look at the department. We had to look at the entire sector. Now, that process has not been concluded. There are two problems that have occurred. One is the budget, But secondly, is the availability of the provinces for us to actually finalize this process.
Just a second, AGG. Is this, who's speaking? Is it Ndaba?
Yes.
When you say sector, you say yes. Sector within, we say sector within government, because when you say just province and the department, it appears as just it's just government. Can you clarify that?
No. When we sector, we're actually inclusive of the provinces. In other words, we are broadening it. But when we are talking about the department, we are specific to the national department.
But the broader sector outside government is not involved.
It's the social development sector.
Okay.
Which includes the province. Yeah, it's a social development sector which includes the provinces.
Let me, sorry for interrupting you, Ndaba, because you're explaining very important things.
Yes.
When my school, when you talk about sector, it's not just government. It's the entire sector that deals with issues of social development, whether it's government or not government. When you say, when you want exclusive government, it's government integrated system, including provinces and national. That's why concepts are going to be very important when you articulate this.
Well, let me concede, your understanding is correct, Chair. That's basically what we mean. We're talking about the integrated government systems, right?
Okay.
They were not talking to each other.
Okay.
They were not talking to each other. So we had to look at that, right? And find a way of making them talk to each other. So that consultation process is outstanding. There are also funding issues. You see, different provinces use different systems, right? And these systems are not talking to each other, and that is really the issue here. And we have to find a systems that are going to talk to each other, right? So that because it's a legacy issue. It's a legacy issue, and that is why you need to have an upgrade.
Okay, proceed. You have explained that. I think I hear you.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I think I've clarified the integrated service delivery model. The integrated service delivery model issue, as I've explained, that work has been done, and we are doing that work, and we've consulted quite a number of chief directorates within the department, except three. Now that work is going to continue. We could not finalize it during the lockdown. Now, the last one that I explained was the sector HR plan. Now, what we did was to develop, firstly, the draft sector HR plan. The sector HR plan talks to two things. The first thing, it talks to the numbers. How many employ?
My apologies, Ndaba, you did explain that.
All right.
You started with the draft and you said numbers and skills. And you went to the service delivery model and say, it has been consulted. You went to the integrated,
yes.
What to call and explain the challenges there. I'm avoiding you going back to what you did, you explained.
Then it's enough, Chairperson, then I'm done.
MNE framework does not fall under you?
No.
Okay, all right.
We will respond to that one shortly, Chairperson.
Okay.
Perhaps let me just ask the two CEOs, starting with the CEO of SASA, and then the CEO of NDA. The CEO of SASA, I think the question is around the number of staff and the full staff complement, etc. And where are we now? I'll respond in terms of the department, and then the NDA and the volunteers. CEO of SASA.
Yes, Good afternoon, honourable members. Good afternoon, Chair and colleagues. On the issue that is raised by honourable Masango on what staffing levels are we operating under in SASSA,
there's a complaint that because this is a public meeting. The speakers on the platform, please switch on your camera.
I'm trying to do that, Chair. I'm trying to switch on the camera and battling with that.
Okay, proceed.
All right, let me do that. Sheesh, I'm battling, Chair. Unless Tamo, can you come in first whilst I switch on my camera?
Proceed, because we cannot stop because the camera is not. Some people must help you whilst you're presenting. Let's proceed.
Okay, thanks, Chair. It's just to indicate that because the infections, ma'am, continue to happen in all our different environments, hence we see also the number of deaths that we've experienced, particularly at SASSA. When you look at us as a portfolio as a whole, 50% of the deaths have actually happened in SASSA. So we need to continue, especially at operational level, which is in the branches, to ensure that the people that are at work this week are not at work next week so that they don't contaminate each other, to make sure that we continue to manage the spread of the virus. So we're currently operating at 50% capacity at the operational level, which basically is in the branches, to make sure that we continue to manage that. So that's the response, ma'am. We do wish that we could bring everybody back, but if we do, it means we may end up actually without anybody, because it therefore means that people would continue to infect each other. Thanks, ma'am. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. CEO of NDA.
Thanks, DG. Okay. Thank you, DG. Good day, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and honourable members, colleagues. Mine is to respond on two areas around volunteer in the main by Member Abram. The volunteer program had two phases. The first phase was the one when we were at level 5 lockdown, where we partnered with 52 civil society organizations in the main that are CNDCs for social development. And we contracted, those civil society organizations contracted 200 volunteers in the first phase. And in doing so, we were making sure that their job opportunities are not compromised entirely in the sector, as the CSOs and cooperatives were totally affected by the level 5, and to ensure that people continue to receive food, because these people were the beneficiaries that had been accessing hot meals in these CNDCs. CSOs are 52, and volunteers in phase one were 580. That was in level 5 in the main April. Then in level 2 or phase 2, we have 200 civil society organizations in the main, those in the CNDCs for social development, and we contracted 2,000 volunteers. That is phase 2. The budget for phase 1 was 1.8 million. The budget covers the 5,000 for the CSO to do administration work. The rest of the budget goes to volunteer stipends and the procurement of the PPE. Phase 2, we had set aside 32 million to take care of the 5,000 of the civil society organization that we had contracted on the volunteer stipends, including the PPEs, for the period of 6 months. And in terms of their roles and their responsibilities, were to continue the knock and drop of food to those beneficiary households, to assist with the queue management during SASSA paydays, and to ensure that there is a grant application for relief grant where people were supported to apply, because we had identified a gap in rural areas where they were not able to access such a service. So they would be supported by the volunteers. Thirdly, they were doing advocacy education on COVID-19 by distribution of brochures that were produced by the Department of Health, having to translate them in their own CSOs so that it's translated in their local languages. And third and fourth and last, they continue to collect data that will assist us to evaluate through our unit on research at NDA to evaluate the impact of the COVID, post-COVID and during COVID, because we have since partnered with DSE and HSRC to start the process of evaluation already on the part that we have covered. And on Member Masango around cooperatives, during level 5 of that complete lockdown, we had to ban the services as guided by the protocols. However, we started the engagement with the National Treasury to allow those cooperatives, which in the main are in textile industry or manufacturing of textiles, to assist with the production of cloth masks and to assist with the distribution of fresh vegetables and fruits in the main, to assist the procurement. Remember, agriculture had to continue to perform their task so that the food would have, the country would continue to have sufficient food. So those during level 4 and 5, where the ban was uplifted, there were after the permission from National Treasury to source those from those which have been suspected in the main by National Development Agents, by the very mandate of the NDA money, to say they have to be incorporated in the database that is issued timely by National Treasury so that they could benefit to the economic opportunities that has since been brought about by the pandemic. So at level 4 and level 5, those cloth masks were produced by the cooperatives. Social Development, SASA and NDA had procured such cloth masks from these cooperatives. And the food parcels, even the private sector, the Solidarity Fund, were able to buy some food produce from those food production cooperatives that is supported by DSD and NDA in the main. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, ADG Prophet. Thank you, CEO.
Thanks, Chair. Let me ask Tabani to deal with the M&D issues, and then I will come in and deal with just two issues after that.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think there were two or three issues raised. Number one was raised by Honorable Stock as well as Mayor van der Merwe on the unachieved targets. Chairperson and other members will recall that before we resubmitted our plan, we had an opportunity to revise it as guided by DPMD. And I must indicate that, as DG indicated, the work that we've come to present is based on the plan that was approved and tabled on the 31st of January, when no one had anticipated the COVID. So the plans that had been concluded and all activities planned as at 31st of October 2019.
Sorry, Pelis, can you go back a little bit? I wanted to follow the flow of what you're saying.
Okay. There were questions on the unachieved targets as to what will happen with them. Is there a plan that we'll have to make in terms of catching up? Indeed, I think I want to explain exactly what is happening with the unachieved targets. I think at the opening we did indicate that a larger proportion of the targets that were not achieved are those targets that entailed or that had to do with us engaging at the in-person, face-to-face, and having those engagements with various stakeholders. The stakeholders that we have are not necessarily people or the stakeholders that will have the adequate and sufficient tools of trade. If you look for the consultations that you want to have with the provinces, or if you look at the training that you want to do, for example, with social workers, some of those social workers might not have the tools of trade and also have access to data. So those were mainly the targets that were not achieved, because during the reporting period, the country was still under lockdown number 5 and level number 4. So with those limited and strict restrictions, we could not then be able to attain some of those. But when in July, then we were, as government, we all went through the process of readjusting our plans and reviewing them. You recall that as department, we took a science, we applied the science in terms of how do we want to do that. And part of the principles that we undertook was to say, for us to go through and revise each and every target. So we started the process of saying, let's look at all the targets in our approved APP and look what it says. So for targets for us to be revised, they had to qualify a particular principle. And one of them was to say, are we going to be able to deliver on this particular target under which restrictions? Are we going to be able to deliver in the target using some of the virtual means and so forth? So the revision process undertook that. It is in that light that you see that of the 55 total targets that you had in our initial APP, 25 of them were reviewed, revised in terms of, number one, if we had said we want to have this policy approved at the parliamentary level or submitted at parliament, we had to revise the level in which that could be done. It could be at class and so forth. For those that involved the training, there's those that involved and so forth. So we had to really rethink as to can we do those within using the virtual means or any other technological advancement that you could consider and so forth. So some of the targets that were not met. So as a result, there were about 10 targets that were totally removed from initial. So some of the targets that are not met could be still be in that particular category, and we did provide the detail when we came to present before this house our revised APP and the principle in terms of the framework for the decision that we had to apply for us to consider revising those. So there is a plan for us going forward, and the targets that are included on the quarter two, what we'll be presenting in the next invitation as soon as we conclude in September, the second quarter, will be based on what we've been able to revise. So as we present, there won't be any reason in terms of attributing the non-achievement to lockdown or any COVID-related matter, because we had to rethink carefully as to all that is contained in the revised APP is what the department could do under the strict or under, and it does specify under which level of the restriction that it could be done. So I thought I need to clarify that from the beginning. The second element it relates to the issues that Chairperson, the concerns that he raised in terms of the M&E and how it seems the presentation has been crafted, which seems to be confusing, as they appear to be a repetition. But at the beginning, I said, if you look at slide number eight, the difference is that in slide number seven, we wanted to highlight those targets that you could not be achieved. So in the IT, IMT is what Ms. Ndaba has been able to articulate, that for the sector strategy that could be done, because it required that you consult extensively with our provincial counterparts, and it could not be attained. And if you look at the M&E, and which also seems to appear on the second part on as if it's the achievement, I think I need to explain it in detail. What the M&E target on the framework is one of those targets that since been deleted, and where to replace it based on the demands and the extent to which we are seeing how work has been done. When we came to present, we always challenged to the extent to which, how do we make sure that we're able to measure all these interventions, especially during COVID, that we've been making, mainly regarding food, psychosocial support services and so forth, in terms of making sure that we've got a real-time data that would be able to check and be able for us to enable us to report exactly what is happening on a regular basis, given the areas in which we work. So it is for that reason that we then prioritize to come up with a digital or an electronic M&E system that's been prioritized to assist us. Rather than coming up with an M&E framework, let's come up with a system that is electronic, there should be make sure that it's sector-based sector. It means to know exactly what is happening from a district level, provincial level, even at national. That should take track in terms of take stock of all those activities that we'll be doing. So ideally, what the plan was informed on the basis that a department for every administrative term, for every 5 years, we develop and revise the existing M&E policy, which is specifically for us as DFD, and we consult with the provinces. And from that policy, we then develop an M&E framework based on the plan. So because that has been reprioritized in terms of the system, what work will still continue, but the system has been much more prioritized, which is electronic. And I can report that we are underway, and I think tomorrow we will be finalizing the appointment of a service provider to assist us in terms of developing that digital M&E system. So what has been put within the strategy, which is on slide 8? Since we have developed a strategic plan for the next 5 years, the plan for us was to say, let us then have an implementation plan linked to an M&E framework so that we are able to measure the extent to which we are making and responding and achieving these outcomes and the impact as articulated in the plans and so forth. So what we wanted as a target is for us to develop that implementation plan, and which in terms of the report is what is said is being was being able to achieve, so that we look at how we are implementing as well as the impact of these strategic desires that are articulated within.
Sorry, are you saying you've got a strategic plan and implementation plan in place?
Yes, Chaplain. To and, measure and, the extent to which we are implementing that.
And there's an existing M&E policy.
Yes, exactly, Chaplain.
And which one? And then which one you're saying has not been approved then?
The new strategic plan, because it's a new plan, the policy is based on the previous plan, it had to be approved because we have since revised it. It just had to be approved
you will be able to forward to the portfolio committee your existing M&E framework policy and plan.
Exactly.
You've got that. Okay.
Yes.
Proceed.
I think I've covered the areas that I wanted to clarify, and then I'll ask the ADG to take over, Chairperson. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Tobani. Maybe let me just sort of continue from where Tobani left off. I think the important thing is to indicate that, yes, indeed, there's an existing strategy. And what we want to do is try and strengthen some of the areas of our work insofar as M&E and oversight is concerned, Chairperson. And I take note of your points of concern around there not being a framework per se. Let me say that the intention is to try and improve this area of work by virtue of it having been, well, firstly, it's necessary to do so, but secondly, there has been a recurring audit challenges issue, as you would know. So the intention is to try and find a new framework so that we're able to deal with that. Perhaps, Chair, the other question that you raised around the targets and the manner in which we put them. I think we take the point that perhaps we should be indicating in a narrative format what does it mean to the ordinary South Africans on the ground? The impact of the interventions that we have. And I think within the overall APT, it may be there in terms of saying this is what we ought to have achieved, this is what impact we ought to have derived from the specific intervention. And going forward, we will certainly find a way of putting it into the report so that it's clearly narrated in that regard. The impact may not necessarily be completely worked out at the point. But we can indicate that by virtue of implementing target A, we've managed to improve people's lives in this area or in this manner. So we'll be working on that in terms of responding. Maybe, Chair, to respond to the question by Honorable Van der Merwe around the social workers, it's important to note that indeed we have engaged Treasury for support in this regard. And because there's a process entailed in that regard, we are still awaiting a finalization. But as you would know, everybody's trying to bid for various projects at this urgent time because of the impact of COVID. So we are also on the list together with many others. We will, of course, advise on some of the programs, including the anti-gangsterism programs that we're trying to introduce, or rather that we're trying to roll out. They have been paused because of COVID. And as Brenda indicates, that part of the challenge is whether also recipients have access to the necessary tools to run these programs virtually. And so these are areas that we are trying to look at to adapt to the new norm because of the impact thereof. And perhaps to respond to Honorable Masango's question around the capacity levels at the DSD, we are still operating. We're operating at 100%, but utilizing a hybrid model. So at times, some colleagues would come to the office over a period of days or hours, and then would shift with other colleagues. Those, of course, with comorbidities continue to work from home in this regard. And I think all of this is trying to adapt to the new normal. Lastly, Chair, the question by Honorable Sukers around the legal costs. I think we've responded to the question in the parliamentary format. I'm not sure whether it has yet been tabled, but perhaps to indicate to Honorable Sukers, we await guidance of the specific amounts, the invoice rather, from the Chief Statutory Advisor. We have not received that as yet, and as soon as we get it, we'll be able to share that with you. Maybe lastly, also from Honorable Sukers, is to indicate that in terms of the utilization of faith-based organizations, I think we're open to such proposals. You'd recall that under Level 4, if I'm not mistaken, we actually provided permits for our members of the clergy to be able to assist us as part of the social service cadre. To assist in terms of rendering the necessary support in that regard. So we're open to some of these. It's just that sometimes some of the processes are pretty tedious that we have to follow in that regard. I think, Chair, we've responded to all the questions. The ones on foster care, as you indicated, we'll respond to when we do that presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I make this proposal, ATG, as we move forward? I just want to insist that program one is very fundamental. Because program one, ATG, is a tool for intelligent and sensible interaction with you with regard to the language and the eyes you use to look at things. In other words, program one deals with the governance framework, right? So that's why it is important that we should be on one page on that. And I repeat this. If you go to the welfare, let me just quickly make an example, because I think we should understand each other as we leave this item. I'm just going to quickly go to something. If you go to his program 3, you say, for instance, let me just choose something here. Social security policy development. As part of developing a policy on maternal support for vulnerable pregnant women, an inception report on costing. What is key there is not the policy. What is key there is not even the report. What is key is all of us having a common understanding what we mean by vulnerable pregnant women and what crisis does it cause to society. And so that when you make a policy proposal, you tell us how do you think it's going to resolve a problem which you would have articulated in clear terms. You know why this is important? Once we know that problem, when we do our oversight in communities, we look at why this problem needs to be resolved, why this policy is correct to be adopted within a week or a year is acceptable. It makes us or enables the community to make an informed evaluation. I can go on and on and on and on and on to a number of these, what you call, of these areas. Because every area of, if you go to program one, for instance, Ndaba, whose name is what? Ndaba's name is?
Kumbula.
Kumbula. He was trying to separate some chaff from grains here. For instance, if you talk about integrated IT system, you naturally, you are responding to a particular nature of problems. That if this thing is not integrated, what are the problems? Because of those problems, you are integrating. We are curious as the portfolio committee to know what this problem that you are responding to. So that once you say it is integrated, when we do oversight, we want to check if that problem you are responding to has been resolved. But if it is not properly concretized, it also doesn't help. Now, what worries me again, the ATC, I have always been thinking that you guys don't have an M&E framework, and you know I've been complaining about this, and a number of other members have been complaining about it. Now, Sam, I'm realizing now you have got an existing MNC framework, M&E framework, which is normal if that is in place. What I want to propose, can you forward that the copy of the existing one, M&E framework? And of course, I know you are reviewing it to respond to the current situation, which is a normal thing in governance and so on. So all I'm saying is that if we can have that, because the key thing is that, to close this point, is that every intervention is responding to a particular problem. And that problem must have relevance to the state of the people on the ground. So that when you intervene to this, you define the problem, it must have relevance to the state of people on the ground, so that when we oversight, we check how is it relevant in terms of the change it's making on the ground. So, last point that I'm saying that I would propose, therefore, just choose one program. You can choose whichever program. Maybe program 3 or program 4. Say, this program is responding to a particular state of situation in society. It is a result of this nature of problem in society, and these policies hope to, when put in place to change this situation, let's choose one program and share that with us. Remember we said the result-based management is going to be an ongoing process. It may not be achieved overnight, but if you can just choose one program in these programs that we are having, so that we check if indeed when you say we want narrative, because portfolio committee doesn't deal with target, those are numbers. Portfolio committee deals with narrative. Because it is the intelligence of the narrative that makes us understand what is it that we're looking for in the crowd. Because we're not going to look for target 1, target 2, target 3, and target 4. We don't know what that is. So in other words, that program you achieve must make the narrative of the problem that is there. What is the state of the people in that area? What is the state that we're responding to? And so on and so on. And of course, please provide this framework and so on. Are we together? Oh, did I clarify myself? Thank you, ATG.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. 100% clear.
Yes. Honorable members, on this, I hope your questions have been responded to. Let's go to the next presentation. Honorable member?
No, Chairperson, I wanted to agree with you that we support the proposals you've made in this regard. So we're happy.
Thank you very much. Honorable ATG, yeah, it doesn't matter whether I say Honorable DG. And a DG must be honorable. Honorable DG, go to the next presentation.
Thanks, Chair. We are providing just by way of update on the areas pertaining to foster care.
Can people mute, please, so that we listen to the ADG only?
Can we ask Chairperson the Secretariat to allow Thabani to share the presentation? It's not enabling him to share at the moment. We want to share the presentation with you. It's a short presentation by way of updates.
Okay.
And LCD will take us through that. It's still not allowing him to share, so the secretaries will need to give us the rights in order to share the presentation quickly. Shange,
Nyanzelela, Kule. Abanye, can you share?
Thanks. Ms. Tirimaha will take us briefly through this presentation, and then we'll respond to some of the questions that have already been asked, including new ones that may come. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon. Chairperson, honorable members, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity. Like it has been said, I will just focus on the foster care progress report on the implementation of the North Gauteng High Court order of 26 November 2019. Okay, the outline will be the purpose, introduction, progress, status of the Children's Amendment Bill, progress made The purpose is to, okay, you were fast, but the purpose is to present the foster care order progress. Now, in introduction, the presentation provides a progress made regarding the legislative reform process. It also provides progress made by the provinces, because they are the implementers, in relation to the order that is due to lapse on 26 November, and also the provincial recovery plans, including a status of provincial interventions on mechanisms, structures, and resources detailed, but all this is in the narrative report. Next slide. Okay, here it's about progress. We should remember the court order was saying there should be comprehensive legislative framework to inform implementation of the foster care. The first one was about the Social Assistance Bill, which has been passed by National Assembly on the 9 June 2020, and the bill has been referred to NCOP. And secondly, the minister will brief the Select Committee on Health and Social Services on 25 August. On June 2010, Cabinet granted approval for the Children's Amendment Bill to be submitted to Parliament. And the department submitted the Children's Amendment Bill, an MOO, to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for certification on 19 June 2020. And the OCSLA provided feedback and an opinion on 24 July 2020. The Children's Amendment Bill and MOO were revised to incorporate sector concerns and state law advisors' recommendations.
What is and MOO, the person, ma'am?
Memorandum of agreement. I will check it. Sorry for that. And the department addressed all their comments affected the proposed changes and submitted the revised bill and MOO to OCSLA
on 28 July. All this is about the regulations, the law that will help us to address foster care plans. Next slide. Now, this slide is about progress made until May. Let's move to the next slide, which incorporates this progress up to July and August. We have outstanding foster care orders as at 26 November, July, informed by the court order. And it was 58,136. And each province had targets as indicated. But now we went on to come up with the progress. And provinces are implementing differently. Some are moving fast, some are slow due to their own reasons. But as of now, the progress was 31,522. Now, deviation as end of July. We should remember we are saying as end of July, it was 26,616. We went further to set targets that would go until July 2020. And we have different targets as per provinces. And the total is 52,169. Unfortunately, we could not get two from the highlighted provinces. And then progress made in relation to the targets that we have set is 18,680. Now we are saying deviation of foster care orders that were projected. Remember, with foster care is revolving. This year is this number. But the next month, because some children have come in, the number will change. Or the children have gone out after being 18, the number will change. So we come with projections. So the projections between 2019 and July 2020, we said is 33,489. And now the next is about projections for the month. Because if all things are going on well, we must have projections for every month. Now projections for August was, the total was 31,939. And progress we have received is 7,329. So the outstanding will be 24,610. Go to the next slide, please. Now we come in with the analysis of the template we had before. In total, we are saying over all orders to be dealt with between 26 November 2019 and November 26, 2020, as in relation to the court order, is 142,236. So as of now, the overall progress made is 57,531. Overall outstanding orders to be extended beyond 21 November will be 84,715. And we should remember to say, as of now, all cases of foster care are deemed
to be existing in relation with the court order. But come 26 November, the order will have lapsed. And if things didn't go well, the probability is we might be having 84,715. Next slide. So both national and province, we are having interventions to try and address these foster care cases. The first one is our engagement with the Department of Basic Education regarding access of proof of school that they are registered. The regulation says a child receiving foster care order must be in school. That's why we must get the report from education, and we continuously engage with the Department of Education where we have bottlenecks. The other regulation is in relation to Form 30 inquiries. And we are saying between April and August 2020, we have issued about 6,425 Form 30s. And the National Department is continuously engaging with the provinces about implementation of foster care, because implementation is supposed to be happening or is happening in the provinces. We come to give the necessary support and to monitor them. And we have been engaging with them telephonically and visually to see how far they are with the implementation of the court order. We do have challenges to implement the order. The first one is due to disruptions from COVID-19, and some provinces were unable to obtain information, and as a result, we could not submit the reports on two-weekly basis as we had agreed with portfolio committee. But I want to elaborate a little bit here. If a case is to be reviewed, a social worker has to go to the family, sit down with the family, and assess the home circumstances. So due to COVID, they could not do that. And it impacted on the number as set in the target. The other challenge we had was provision of sufficient PPEs to officials, especially when they go out to visit the family and do home circumstances reports. And the big one is social work working according to rotation. It has been a challenge, a big one. And the provinces can attest we're not in a position to meet the targets as said. And the last challenge is access to tools of trade. You know, the order was saying we have to provide systems and trade of tools for the social workers down there to be in a position to implement foster care, but it has been a problem. Now, proposals to address these challenges, we are saying the most important one is provision of tools of trade by provinces, because they will enable the social workers to be in a position to visit and also to take the cases to court, and at the end, the case being reviewed, and lastly, the child enjoying foster care grants. And we're saying provinces to procure PPEs for staff, you know, as much as they can. And we have now to improve on management of staff rotation, but in line with the COVID protocols. Because, you know, we have been having this outstanding now, the rotation, so it will be very difficult and slow for us to achieve the said targets. And we have been engaging with the province to say, yes, we understand your challenges, but try hard to provide weekly reports so that we can submit to the principals and we all be together on the same page. Lastly, in conclusion, it is recommended that the portfolio committee to take note of the progress made in the implementation of the court order, support parliamentary process to expedite the process of the two bills in compliance with the court order, because if the law can change, we will be in a better position to render foster care. I thank you.
Are we done, HOD?
Yes, Chair. I think we are. I think the important thing, just Speedy spoke to it at the beginning, is just to highlight that we did yesterday brief the NCOP. We took the NCOP through the social assistance bill, which has an important alignment to this work of foster care in line with providing a comprehensive legal solution. And we will in the next few weeks also be working with the NCOP and briefing the other provincial legislatures as per the request of the NCOP and the provincial legislatures on the social assistance bill. Thank you, Chair.
I hope the NCOP, the attention has been drawn to the urgency of finalizing that bill.
Yes, indeed, Chairperson. We did yesterday also highlight it in this regard. And the hope is that by September, we would have concluded the consultations by the end of September with all legislatures in this regard. Some members of various legislatures were invited yesterday. We will then continue to work with the NCOP going forward.
Can you explain that consultation, ATG, because I thought it's National Assembly, it's NCOP. Anything outside that?
Yes, so there's been a request from the provincial legislatures to us, and we shared but the request also went to the NCOP, for the NCOP to brief each and every provincial legislature on the social assistance bill. So we will be guided by the NCOP in terms of where they suggest we support them in providing those briefings to those various provincial legislatures.
You know, my major worry, I need to be advised by your legal people, is that I'm not sure if that's a legal step towards implementing this bill.
Yeah.
Because remember, when we adopt bills, it means they were preceded by consultations.
That's right.
When they are at this level, it means NA is dealing with them based on that, NCOP is dealing with them. I'm worried about this. I think that we need to be clarified about this. Because I don't know whether this is a legal step. Yes.
Do
you want to make a comment on that?
Yes. I raised the same question yesterday to the NCOP. Seeking guidance in the same vein. I think what we'll do is we'll touch base because we were receiving a direct communication also from the provincial legislatures asking us to come and present accordingly in this regard. No. So I did make the seek guidance on it, and we will await further guidance in this regard, but we'll consult with you accordingly. Chair, just quickly, the MOO is the Memorandum of Objectives of the Bill. It basically explains the rationale behind each of the clauses within the
bill. But you are complicating something that is basic. Why do you say the memorandum of the whatever? What is MOU? What is this thing? All I'm saying, I think we'll have to discuss in the National Assembly and the NCOP. This cannot be, this is not a legal requirement for this process. I'm worried something has ended and this is delayed by something which is not a legal requirement. My understanding is that when provinces express their views in the NCOP, there have been consultations before that. Once the NCOP takes a position, that is done. And I think we need to get clarity. I'm a bit worried about that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, Chair, we'll check in with our legal and also consult the Parliament accordingly.
Well, even ourselves, I think. Who's our lawyer here? I think let's clarify this matter. I would be uncomfortable if this bill is delayed by other things which are not a legal requirement, taking into account its urgency. Honourable members, I've got only three hands, yeah? Honourable Stock, Honourable Aris, and Honourable Masango. Any other hands on the screen? Honourable Seker, any other hands? Going, gone. All I'm saying before the honourable members speak, if you look at the presentation, what it says, there's 80-something thousand outstanding for the deadline of November. 57,000 is the progress. 26 November lapses. Serious implications, and so on. But let me hear what the members are going to say. Honourable Stock.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me also appreciate the presentation of foster care that was done now by the department. The introduction of the foster care grant progress report indicates that the presentation would include the provincial recovery plans, including the status of the provincial interventions on mechanisms, the structures and the resources which are detailed in the narrative report. I would have thought, Honourable Chairperson, that this detailed narrative report would have been presented and attached as an addendum to the presentation that was made to the Portfolio Committee regarding foster care grant. But anyway, for the sake of progress and also concluding on this issue of foster care, my submission is that I would like to find out from the department how is the detailed narrative report demonstrated in the progress report, and then maybe also when are they going to present it to us as a portfolio committee so that we are able to engage on this narrative report. One of the most instrumental features in the addressing and resolving of the foster care grant system is the development of a comprehensive device solution. And I think this issue, even today, many honourable members have been reflecting on it. The department also speaks about it. A number of portfolio committee meetings as well. We've been speaking about the development of a comprehensive legal solution. So I would like to find out also from the side of the department, what is the progress on the implementation of the comprehensive legal solution? Where are we? And then how do we move forward? And then how soon are we able to deliver on that legal solution? What has been the update also from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor on the final certification of the Children's Amendment Bill? And then when is it also going to be tabled to Parliament? So all the challenges, can we just be taken into confidence and then clarity being sought and given to the Portfolio Committee as to where are we and then how do we move forward and resolve this matter once and for all? Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Well, thanks, Honourable Stokes. Just to clarify that part, the bill is before us now. At the end of this meeting, we need to find a way how are we going to play our part within the limited time. Honourable Aris.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is just on, I've recently read an article which states that 118 babies has been abandoned at birth in public hospitals across Gauteng. And it is really worrisome. And mine is just, I want to find out how many social workers do we need to successfully implement the foster care system. And then, Chair, I'm really worried, and it happens all the time. Lindy already sent us a presentation yesterday that indicates the progress report on the foster care. And in that report, they indicate there was a zero performance in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Northwest KZN and Mpumalanga. But when the department today present to us, they have indicated that there's only two provinces on their slide. There's only two provinces that didn't obtain any information on progress. Chair, it is worrisome that every time the department come and present presentations to us, they present different information to us. I want to ask the department to stop that. If they send us the presentation yesterday, it means they must come and present that presentation, not the presentation that they have just and then not even inform us about that. And then, in terms of the PPE of officials, it is worrisome that we are 5 months in COVID-19 and yet the department come and tell the portfolio that the officials don't have sufficient PPEs. It is really a worrying factor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation on foster care. My question is on the issue of the social workers and their tools of trade. For some time now, Chair, we've been getting a feedback from the department that says that they have approached or they are approaching National Treasury on this issue of social workers. I just want to find out, how is social workers that the department needs so desperately, or in fact, even the country needs so desperately, how are they different from the other things that need to happen? Are they not in the organogram of the department? What makes them a special approach to the National Treasury when we know and we can see how much they need to be recruited and work for the department? I just want to some clarity, because over time it's just been we are approaching National Treasury on this issue, but I'm not sure why that is the case in the first place. The other thing, during the presentation, the lady that was presenting said that some provinces have got reasons why they are moving slow. I would like to know those reasons, because the reasons are probably what we will need if we don't meet the deadline, and those reasons need to be valid and need to be strong enough to say that we are not meeting the deadline again. But also also it was said that we need to expedite the process. I believe that everything is in place where the portfolio committee or the chairperson should have done whatever he needed to do. He has done that on time, although it might not meet the legal processing of legislation in Parliament. And that expediting is going to have to be, in my view at least, is going to have to be accompanied by the support that we get through the reports that come out of the provinces in as far as this this whole program project is concerned. And the last thing, Chair, that I wanted to find out, just some clarity, and I believe that the Chair would be able to even intervene here. The issue of the provinces wanting direct presentations, would that be not covered by the 6 weeks, I believe, from when one was in NCOP? Would that not be covered by the 6 week sort of time that is needed from the time that the bill is presented at NCOP anyway for the delegates to get mandates from their provinces? Is this now outside of that sort of cycle that is involved in the processing of legislation? I just would like to find that out, Chair, because we cannot afford any delays if we are to meet the deadline as Parliament. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question that the presenter has mentioned in a presentation. It was mentioned that there were adjustments made in response to the sector's concerns around the bill. If the department can please expand on that, what was the amendments that was made? She mentioned it in relation to the MOO. And then I also wanted to understand the process, Chair. If the legal implications of this bill, is that still going to be discussed with the committee with our legal representative on the committee or not?
Thank you, Honorable Seka. In the meantime, is let's say name Lindwe, your lawyer.
Mchengane.
Hey, my apologies. In the meantime, can Mchengane prepare himself for two things towards the end of this? The legal relevance. I don't have a problem people wanting to be informed, to understand, but the legal imperative of that, whether it fits in the process on the Social Assistance Amendment Bill, and probably say something, and probably an ATG at the end, about us meeting the 26th of November deadline. At the end, we need to find one another on that. ATG, can you respond? Comments and questions have been raised.
Thanks, Chair. I will ask our CD to first respond, and then I'll come in to respond to one or two others.
I'll catch up on those.
Thank you once more. Honorable Stock, we have the narrative report. We can send it immediately after this. And the report is about catch-up. Provinces are telling us how or what are the steps they are going to take to address foster care and meet the deadline. It's mainly about the tools of trade. They tell us how they're going to provide those tools of trade. Human resource, if they have to appoint, how they're going to do it. Systems. The court order, section 2.2, was saying there must be systems in place. So the provinces in those narrative reports are telling us briefly about that. But like I'm saying, we will send you the report so that we can move together on the same page. Okay, the comprehensive legal solution, I think Chairperson has answered that. And the babies that are being abandoned, we have been
We have been engaging with the hospitals, with the NGOs, where these babies are being abandoned. Because there are processes. If a baby is being abandoned, there are processes to be followed for that baby to be saved. But the good thing is we are having engagement with the NGOs that are to adopt those children if need be. And we are also engaging with the hospitals because some of these children are abandoned in hospital. But according to the report we had as DSD, our number was small. So these children were in hospitals, were in other sectors, and unfortunately, they were not reported in the Child Protection Register. Because if they were reported in that register, we'd be having that information, and then would come with action plan to see as how we deal with those children. But the good point is we are engaging in relation to that. About different new statistics, we really apologize for that because we depend from the provinces to give us information. Sometimes you'll get the information last minute. And on the other hand, you have pressure to submit to the portfolio committee. But we'll try and check a way as how we can deal with this. Because for the statistics, honestly, we depend solely from the provinces. And the PPEs, provinces are trying hard to address that. Okay, what I would like to highlight is there was this court order, but there was never additional fund from Treasury for us to implement this court order. So we have been using the same thing we have, and it has been difficult, especially to some of the provinces. That's the big problem. Treasury never provided us with additional funds to address this presenting problem. Provinces to provide direct presentations, I really concur with you because it has to come from the provinces to national to portfolio committee. So if there was a direct link, it would be much better. Okay, adjustment made in relation to MOO. There are different sectors. We are just social workers. We are just social scientists. But we have legal experts. So we give them information to say, this is the information as technocrats. But now the legal experts take that information from the technocrats, that is us, social workers, and now tailor-made it into the law. That's where here and there there would be amendments. I think I have covered most of the questions, DG.
Hey, DG.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for sitting. Maybe just to firstly respond to Honorable Stock's question around process or around where are we on this matter. Thanks, Chair. Yeah, so the process right now in terms of where it is, it's with the, we've processed everything through the DS office, the Burg office, through the Burg office, and we've received final certification of the bill from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, which has been submitted to Parliament for introduction in line with rule, I think it's 275. If I'm not mistaken. And so the process in terms of proofreading, the second round has concluded as well on that matter. So as far as we understand it, it's now within Parliament's purview to conclude with the necessary processes in that regard. Let me also indicate that, yes, I think LCD responded to Honorable Adriz's inquiries. When we come to the committee, we want to ideally give you the latest information. But since we submitted the presentation last Thursday, if not Friday, this document, by virtue of it being a live document, will change. So the numbers will change. And maybe what we should do is to indicate that in your previous presentation, you have number A. However, with an update received over the weekend and the past 2 days, this is where we are now sitting. So it's not that the information is incorrectly being provided. We are providing the information at the time as required by the committee. But as LCD indicated, we do have a challenge sometimes of feedback from the provinces. And perhaps what would be good is also to perhaps invite the provinces at a later stage where possible. So maybe the other question I wanted to respond to, Honorable Masango, indeed, we have been saying that the processes around funding lies with Treasury, but LCD responded to indicate that we are not given any finances to this in this regard. There's a process in Treasury called unforeseen and unavoidable. We've submitted a bid through that process requesting for support for additional social workers. That process is dealt with solely by presidency. And I think the first sitting of that process will happen sometime in September. So we've done what we need to do in terms of making the request. This is all additional and all new, and hence we had to make the request in the manner in which we did. Let me see. Yeah, I think I've responded. I think we between our CD and I, we've Honourable Stock's question around where we are on the comprehensive social on the comprehensive legal solution. I think I think on slide number, LCD responded a bit to it, but some of the information is on slide number 4, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's slide number 4, where we highlight the various, slide number 5, where we highlight the various dependencies, for lack of a better word, in reaching the comprehensive legal solution. We have to process the Children's Amendment Bill. We have to process the Social Assistance Bill. At the same time, we have to make progress in terms of concluding the backlog and so on and so forth. So they're intertwined in a way. And what we could do is what we've given you here is an update since what in terms of what has happened in the past few months, including an update on the numbers in terms of closing the backlog. So what we can do, Honorable Stock, is perhaps when there's progress again, we then could be able to provide you in that regard. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Mjengane.
Chairperson, I don't see him. He was in Joburg. I don't know whether he's back with the committee. With another committee, but I will convey the message to him, and then he will definitely respond.
You see, we are seemingly near crossroad, if not crossroad now, because of the time it took the cabinet to refer the bill to the portfolio committee. I still doubt if the COVID would have actually stopped us from processing this thing if the cabinet had finished on time. Now, the challenge we have is that, I hope the DG is listening to this. The challenge we have, I want to assume that even the legal state, the legal advisor in the department must have thought about the situation where we are now and the time we have received the bill and the fact that you've got so many clauses to change in the bill. Somebody said, what, 200? I don't know how many. We need now, honorable members, to look at what best can we do. And if upfront we are clear, it's not going to be doable by the 6th of November, which seems to be clear to me. We need a legal advice as quick as possible on this matter, so that we are able to up on time, revise the time frame, and table as we do a progress report to the matter of court, whoever. Because I, as far as I'm concerned, the progress report was supposed to be. And then in that progress report, not in November, now, around September and August, we must have analyzed the entire situation. I don't know what is the due date, DG for report to the court and whoever is relevant, and draw the attention of everyone. In the meantime, probably work on a time frame that is sensible. Linda, do you want to say anything on that?
I concur with you, Chairperson. I think that we need from our side to look at the program, how practical it is. Yes, Chair. I think I'll speak again with Mjernan around the matter you raised.
Can we, DG, you are listening, you are here, am I right?
Yes, Chairperson, we're here.
Can your legal people and the assembly legal people put us together with the technical people from your department and our side within this, by next week, there must be clarity with regard to what line must we follow on this matter. But in the meantime, I don't know what honorable members, I would be curious to hear them. If we want to move on this, we might end up during the constituency or recess period having to come to Parliament if the law so allow. But I want to get the attitude of the honorable members to that, because one time I wrote something on behalf of the portfolio committee and certain honorable members punched me under belt. I must be very careful about that. I'm saying if we are to move on this, we might have to forfeit some of the normal holidays we have. Because this is a serious matter for the department. I just want to hear honorable members commenting on that one.
Chair?
Yes?
Honorable van der Merwe.
Oh, those are the hands, yeah? All right. Let me start with honorable Stock, if those are the hands. Put your hand on the screen, honorable van der Merwe. Honorable Stock?
No, Honorable Chair, my hand was up earlier on. Maybe I must put it down now.
It's before.
Yeah,
so remove your hands, then. You must remove your hands. I'm asking honorable members to comment on this, on what I've just said, that there are certain sacrifices the committee might have to make to do the best we can before the 26th. I want to hear what honorable members have to say about that.
Honourable Chair, may I ask a question?
Honourable members, can we make sure that, can somebody remove these things on the, can you remove your, because your hands are for the old, what to call? Let me read the list now. Honorable Seker, Honorable Mvana, Honorable van der Merwe, Honorable Maslango, you want to speak on this matter? 1 to 2 minutes, please. Honorable Aris, Honorable Seker, 1 to 2 minutes, please.
Okay, Chair, can I go?
Yes.
Okay. Chair, I didn't hear an answer to my earlier question. So may I ask if it means that those aspects, the technicalities around the bill, will then be discussed with us in committee? Because I didn't hear the answer being given on what I asked in terms of what are those adjustments that has been made. And I heard you reference that 200 adjustments has been made. I think that's what you referred to. So
What I was once advised is to be made, but legal people need to confirm that.
Okay. Because my biggest concern is that the rush is there, because we all understand that it needs to be done. The biggest concern
for me personally is that the committee itself has not discussed the Children's Amendment Bill. And whether there is going to be a legal representation by our legal representative to the committee to understand what the bill is about, and also in order for this committee to all then be on one page, so that when we do ask for an acceleration in terms of timeline, that we are unified in that call. That's what I want to say.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. Honourable Fanamefe, I think I hear you. Honourable Fanamefe.
No, Chairperson, mine was simply to answer what you were asking of us, and that is whether we would prioritize time during the recess to deal with these matters so that they can be finalized and expedited. And I think it's a very important issue. There's a court deadline that we have to meet as well. So I think really, since your subcommittee will be sitting anyway to deal with NDA issues, that we really put aside as a committee September to deal with this and even cancel our recess. It's that important, Chairperson, and I would like to support you in that. Thank you.
Honourable Masango, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that, and I need to be clarified, is that this Social Assistance Amendment Bill is the one closer to being presented to the North Gauteng High Court as a part of the comprehensive legal solution. Because when I asked the question, when the legal people were in the meeting, when we were discussing the Social Assistance Amendment Bill, it was said that it's not the full comprehensive legal solution. It's part of it. And the Children Amendment Bill is going to be the one that will make it even more comprehensive. So my question then is, are we saying that we want to make sure, even if we work over the constituency period, to make sure that the Social Assistance Amendment Bill is the one that we are going to be presenting to the High Court, because it's closer to being finalized? And the Children's Amendment Bill, there is a view that in the statement has no more than six amendments that relate directly to the foster care grant. To the foster care advisors, if it's possible for those six amendments to be passed before the deadline, which can be the work that we embark on, as the Chair is saying rightly, that we might need to work over the period of time when it's constituency period, and then leave the rest of the Children Amendment Bill for the 2021 cycle, as it were. That would be my question, Chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Honourable Masango. Honourable Aris, you are the last.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, it is just
Honourable Aris?
You theta and I theta.
My apologies.
Chair. It is just on that that you have asked in terms of availability for the recess period. You know, we as the EFF, we actually want to go to Parliament. So yes, it's not a problem that we can.
Okay, all right. I hear you. Thank you. I think my understanding, Honourable Members, that Honourable Vana, sorry.
No, covered, sir.
Thank you.
You have forgotten about me. I'm covered.
No, but I'm calling
in terms
you now.
Yeah,
no problem. It's okay.
We are okay, in fine. Your hands in terms of these meetings that need to be held. Thank
you very much. But also, to be nice, just not to use power, but just detective, there's a spirit to drive this thing. My understanding, in a nutshell, members are saying, if sacrifices have to be made, we have to, but there are certain things that need to be clarified. They come from the question of Honorable Seker and Honorable Masango. Honorable Masango, Honorable Seker wants to know, her view, which is correct, Honorable Osaka, which is correct, that let's be legal people must table before us the nature of the challenge that we are faced with. So that whatever sacrifices we commit to, it must be clear. I think that is question is in order. And then Honorable Masango wanted to check one, because actually what she's raising falls in the question that Honorable Sager is asking, that social amendment bill, social assistance amendment bill, and if there are few clauses in the children's amendment, all those questions will be answered when legal people in an urgent meeting present to us, in my view, not later than next week, just take us through when we are to amend this bill, what exactly is the load of the task at hand. My understanding, Honorable Masango, the social amendment bill was pulled in because it was said it is quicker to implement, it can resolve some of the few things whilst we are pushing the ideal one. Not necessarily on the radar of the court, but again, I'm very careful on that. Can we agree that as a matter of urgency, Ms. Thabo, by next week, we sit just to look at the implications of this, so that when we make whatever proposals, whether to a matter of court, whether to parliament, we base them on the clear picture that legal people have given us together with the technical people in general. Is that okay, Honorable Members?
It's okay, Chair.
Thank you very much. ADJ, you hear what the process we're going to follow, am I right?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I think we're fine with the process. Our legal colleague is in the meeting,
yes.
And we'll take a note as well.
So your technical people, be they legal or not legal, our technical people, be they legal, need to put their heads together and come before the committee and present exactly the nature of the animal we are confronted with. At that point in time, I must thank the department very profusely, as usual, for the cooperation, and we hope to find one another as we go on. And of course, the way forward will be concretized by the committee secretary so that you know what we want in as far as, in particular, the first quarter report is concerned. The department is free to leave after that gratitude. Honorable members, I'm told we've got three sets of minutes we're supposed to deal with. What are the dates, Linda?
Thank you very much. It's 31st of July. 18th of July? Yes, Chair. 18th of August and 19th of last week, 19th of August.
31st July?
18th August. 18th of, and 19th of August.
So that was two consecutive days.
Yes, Chair. Last week.
21 July, 18 August, and 19 August.
Yes,
Honorable Members, can we start with the 31st July? Our people receive those minutes. Am I right?
Chairperson, I forwarded the minutes to the members.
No, I think I saw them too. Yeah. Yes. Honorable Members?
Shallow Padaisu.
Let's start with the 31st July.
I would like to propose the adoption of the
minutes. Mr. Secretary, that's a brief mute. Osvalida, I warn. Honorable Masango proposes the adoption of the 31st. Any second down? 31st July. Any second,
Honorable Talk.
Thank you very much. 18 August, any proposal for adoption?
Can I propose again, Chair? Am I allowed?
Yes.
Okay, I propose adoption, Chair.
Can we have a different second,
It's myself, Chair. 18
August, yes? Honorable Bana.
Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Bana. The last minute is the 19th August. Honorable Members, any proposal for adoption? It can't be bridged now.
Sorry, Chairperson. For the 18th of August, Honorable Mvana was in the another meeting, PC on Human Settlement. She was not part of the meeting, so we wanted to send a person to second. Thank you very much.
Can you get a different second for the 18th of August?
I'll second Honorable Chair Abrams.
Thanks, Honorable Abrams. 19 August. Any proposal for adoption?
I will propose for the adoption, Chairperson.
Honorable Van der Merwe, any seconder?
Mvana seconds, I was present.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that's how our day ends. Again, always, thank you for this very productive and harmonious and productive committee. Have a good weekend. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Mandla Madiba.
Thanks, Chair.